TV with Cam Edwards.
Good Monday to you. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA TV. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Cam Edwards, your host, coming to you once again from beautiful downtown Farmville, Virginia today. Was up at the mothership on Friday in D.C. for the March for Our Rights on Saturday, and then back home for a beautiful Sunday afternoon. We've got John Pop and Danny Lyon actually floating around here, shooting some B-roll on the streets of Farmville, checking out the brand-new Hotel Wyanoke in downtown as well, just soaking in small-town America. We are also eagerly awaiting 9 p.m. Eastern tonight when President Donald Trump will announce his pick for the U.S. Supreme Court. And there have been so many stories today. I mean, depending on who you read, Donald Trump has settled on one of about four names. it's the perfect DC story because you can quote people anonymously. Nobody knows if you're right or not because there's no way to actually check this. So fantastic for the media. They get to report all kinds of rumor that's unsubstantiated by fact. And we'll all find out again at 9 o'clock this evening who Donald Trump is going to pick for the next spot there on the Supreme Court to open with the retirement of Justice Anthony Kennedy. We'll also be covering this tomorrow on Cam and Company. Just so you know, we will have a full roundup throughout the afternoon. Now, coming up on the show today, Selena Zito joins us of The Great Revolt. Also, Argo J scheduled to join us later on in the hour. We're going to talk later in the hour for sure about this story out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The video making the rounds. And you know, Cameron, sometimes we wonder, what is it that that makes a armed citizen story go viral? This one, pretty understandable, right? Yeah. I mean, this is a restaurant, and a guy comes into the back into the kitchen, confronts a woman, sucker punches her, and then she runs behind her coworker who pulls out a gun, and all of a sudden, this attack stops. The guy is still yelling, but he is now walking away. The waitress in question, who was a concealed carry holder, has actually quit after this incident. The woman who was assaulted is back at work. And at last report, this guy who assaulted this employee, he's still out on the loose. But again, really easy to understand why this story went viral. There's video of this happening. It's unexpected. You don't expect any of that. You don't expect somebody to walk back into the kitchen of a restaurant and punch one of the employees, and you don't expect another employee to then draw her firearm to protect her coworker. It's compelling stuff. Again, largely ignored by anti-gun activists who say that they're not opposed to the Second Amendment, but sure act like they're opposed to the Second Amendment. So that's coming up later on in the hour. Also next hour, Zina Amirani of March for Our Rights, how the L.A. rally went. I was at, again, the rally in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. In fact, we've got some footage here. We'll actually share the speech. It was a good lineup of speakers out there. Look, these are folks who don't have the celebrity endorsements. They're not basking in the media spotlight. But they care very much about their point of view being represented. And they feel like if you are a young person today in high school, in college, that there is this peer pressure to support gun control, to believe a certain way, not to dress a certain way. That's not the peer pressure to smoke or to drink or to have sex or not have sex. It's the peer pressure to believe something. Even if you've investigated the issue and you've come to a different conclusion, if you don't go along with the crowd, you're kind of ostracized. So in Washington, D.C. over the weekend, I spoke about the last 10 years, the next 10 years, and really the importance of the November elections this year. Take a look and a listen to me. God, that sounds so egotistical, Cameron. At the March for Our Rights rally in Washington, D.C. this weekend.
Thank you all for coming out. And first of all, let me just say thank you to Morgan and all of the other volunteers who have put this together. Without a lot of infrastructure, without celebrity help, without national media attention. Thank you for doing this. Absolutely. Now, as Morgan mentioned, I did not grow up in a gun-owning family. I lived in Oklahoma. My family was not anti-gun, but I grew up with a single mom, and she just wasn't a gun owner. It wasn't until I was in my early 20s, I met the woman who would become my wife, that my eyes were sort of open to the issue. So while I was growing up and living in gun-friendly Oklahoma, my wife was living in the murder capital of the United States, Camden, New Jersey. She was a single mom of two, living in subsidized housing. It was literally impossible for her to legally get a gun, and yet somehow it was really, really easy for the gang members and the criminals in her community to get a gun. One night, before we even met in person, we actually met online way back in the day, a dial-up internet romance that's still been going strong 21 years later. We're on the phone one night talking, it's about midnight, and I distinctly hear the sound of gunshots coming through the phone. And I said her name, and she didn't answer. And I said her name a little louder, and she didn't answer. And eventually, I was screaming into the phone, and there was no response. So that entire night, I stayed awake. I didn't know what I could do. I didn't know where she lived. Eventually, 8 o'clock the next morning, I call her work, and she picked up the phone. And I was flabbergasted. I said, "What happened? I heard the gunshot. She wouldn't speak. What and she said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "I fell asleep." And I said, "How could you fall asleep? I heard the gunshots." She said, "I live in Camden. That's like the sound of crickets where you live." And I said, "But doesn't New Jersey have these really tough gun laws?" And she just laughed. And it wasn't like a hearty har har. It was just that sort of dry, bitter chuckle, like, "Yeah, we got great gun laws." And that got me thinking, you know, in New Jersey, even to this day, in order for you to become a legal gun owner, you have to possess what's called a firearms identification card. If you are a handgun owner, you have to acquire what's called a pistol purchase permit. Before you even go to the gun store, before you even pick out the gun and go through the background check, you've got to go through a background check through your county sheriff. You have to provide character references to non-family members that can attest to your good character. Imagine if you just moved to the state of New Jersey. You don't know anybody. In order for you to legally exercise your constitutional right, you have to get a permission slip from the government. That's where we are, even a decade after the Heller decision was handed down behind us. In California, depending on where you live, self-defense may not be seen as a good enough reason to get a concealed carry license. If you live in Baltimore, Maryland, it doesn't matter if you live in the worst neighborhood in Baltimore, and you want to be able to protect yourself walking home at night, the state of Maryland says, no, that's not good enough. We need to know that there's some sort of specific ongoing threat against your life, that there's some sort of special need so we can give you permission to bear arms. You know, 10 years ago when the Heller decision was decided, we knew that that wasn't going to be the last Second Amendment case. We knew that the fight was going to continue. I don't know that we anticipated a decade on you would have shall issue right to carry in Washington, D.C., but you would not be able to legally purchase a firearm in Washington, D.C. You know, if we wanted to march down to the nearest gun store today, we'd have to march into Maryland. If we wanted to march down to the nearest range, we'd have to march into Maryland. So we are still fighting for the basic recognition of our right to keep and bear arms. We've been doing it a lot longer than 10 years. The fight is going to continue a lot more than 10. But the next decade is going to be absolutely critical and crucial to what our right looks like across the United States. And the folks who want to take this right away, look, they're smart. Don't call them stupid. They know exactly what they're doing. They're savvy. They've got political professionals making six-figure salaries. They've got deep pockets. They've got Michael Bloomberg's got to spend $80 million in the midterm elections this year. Don't underestimate the folks out there around this country who want to see your right taken away. They don't even call it gun control anymore because gun control doesn't poll well. So what do they call it these days? Gun safety, right? And what's their idea of gun safety? Is it go to the range? Is it get training? No, their idea of gun safety is don't own a gun. That's it. They say they don't want to take your guns away. You've heard that, right? What are they doing in Deerfield, Illinois right now? They just passed a semi-auto ban, and legal gun owners Gun owners who had possessed their firearms for a decade or more were told, you can't have them anymore. Oh, we're not going to come door to door and take them. We're asking you to give them up. And if you don't turn them into police, if you don't destroy them, you got to get them out of the village of Deerfield. We had gun owners stand up. We had gun owners file suit. And we had a judge block that law from going into effect while it's being litigated. Same thing with magazines. In New Jersey right now, Governor Phil Murphy just signed a half dozen gun control bills, including a magazine ban that requires you to turn your magazines over 10 rounds in. You can't possess them anymore. That also, by the way, is being challenged in court. But they say they don't want to take our guns. They're trying to take our guns. They're trying to take our magazines. They say that they don't have any opposition to the Second Amendment. They're just in favor of a few common sense gun safety rules. And yet these common sense gun safety rules would make it impossible for a 20-year-old to legally purchase a firearm for self-defense. Their quote-unquote common sense gun safety rules would prohibit individuals from carrying a firearm for self-defense. Their idea of common sense is, again, don't own a gun. And they've got the media behind them. They've got a lot of politicians who work here behind them. And they believe that they're just getting started. They think that we've had a 140-some-odd year head start with the NRA getting started in 1871. They think that they're playing catch-up right now. And in places around the country like D.C., New York, they're marching in Chicago right now. They're shutting down the Dan Ryan Expressway to march in opposition to gun violence. Now, they're not talking to the people who are actually committing gun violence. They're not engaging with the gang members responsible for the predominant amount of violent crime in Chicago. They're not marching on the streets of Baltimore. They're marching down where the cameras can see them. And they know that if they can reach middle America, if they can reach your friends, if they can reach your neighbors, if they can convince them that they're right and you're wrong, then they can get their way. So outreach like this, where we can come together in support of our right to keep and bear arms, it is incredibly important. But the outreach we do each and every day is even more important. The conversations that we have at work or at school or at the gym, when somebody comes up to you and says, hey, why do you want to own one of those guns anyway? You know, we can get our back up and we can call them stupid and shall not be infringed, or we can actually engage them. This is one of the things that we try to do each and every day on Cam and Company on NRA TV, is we actually have a conversation, or we try to have a conversation. The gun control crowd doesn't really want to have much of a conversation. They do really want to yell at us. But if we can talk to them, if we can share our stories, because I'm guessing if we went around here, each and every one of you has a compelling story about why it is that you support the Second Amendment. It's not because somebody told you to, right? It's not because, well, it's just how it's always been. You think for yourself, you've reached this conclusion that this right is important to you, that this right is important to the country, that this right is worth protecting. But where do most Americans who aren't gun owners, where do they ever hear that perspective? They don't hear it on the local news. They don't see it, for the most part, in their movies. They certainly don't see it at Hollywood award shows. Every now and then, Bill Maher might do something cool, like invite Colleen Noir onto his show, and Colleen will do a great job of representing gun owners. Every now and then, they'll throw us a bone, and we get to speak our piece and present our point of view. But by and large, the work that we're doing, the real grassroots work that we're doing, is one-on-one, talking with friends, talking with family, talking with those folks in our daily lives. And when we do that, when we engage in that outreach, we win. You know, 10 years ago, behind you, we had the Heller decision. And over the next 10 years, we're going to see a lot of important stuff happening behind me here, including the next fight for the Supreme Court seat. But even if we get another pro-gun judge onto the Supreme Court, even if we get two pro-gun justices onto the Supreme Court, our fight is going to continue. There are going to be attempts by gun control activists around the country to push that envelope as hard as they can. Just look at what happened in Washington, D.C. after the Heller decision was decided. We not only had Dick Heller with the Heller case, but we had Dick Heller in Heller 2. We had continued litigation because the District of Columbia, the local government there, although they were told by the Supreme Court, you're violating the constitutional rights of American citizens with your gun laws. Their response was basically, well, we don't think so. So, fine. You can keep a gun in your home. Fine. The storage laws, we'll change them just a little bit. But we're going to do everything we can to make it as hard as possible for you to exercise your rights. And that mindset, that attitude, is not going to go away. We're going to be dealing with that for years and years to come. And you've heard a lot of folks say that this is the most important election year ever. Well, we say that every election cycle, and it's because it's true. We can't go back. We can only go forward. And so over the next couple of years, if we want to see things like national right to carry reciprocity get passed, we've got to see a stronger pro-Second Amendment faction in our U.S. Senate. If we want to see, again, our rights upheld in courts, we've got to ensure that there are the votes in the Senate to put those justices that can read the plain text of the Bill of Rights and put them on the bench for the next 10, 20, 30 years. And that is hard work. I applaud you all for being out here today, but I hope that this is just the beginning of your efforts this year. I hope that you'll tune into NRA TV each and every day, not just for Cam and Company, but for Dana Lash, for Grant Stinchfield, Dan Bongino. Learn what's going on around the nation. Learn what's going on in your community. Show up at city council meetings. Show up at your school board meetings. You know, Moms Demand Action, they're actually showing up at school board meetings around the country right now. They're trying to get school boards to pass resolutions to send to Congress calling for more gun control. Every avenue that the gun control advocates are finding, they need to find us there too. Every body where they show up, they need to find our bodies there as well. And I would encourage you as well to go to NRAILA.org. When you get there, click that Grassroots Division tab. Because as an NRA member, as a gun owner, you are part of a grassroots army that is 6 million strong. There is nothing like it in politics in the United States of America. And when we all speak as one voice, we can get things done. So even though it's the height of summer right now, November seems like a long way away, there's stuff that we can be doing on the ground in these congressional districts. There are things that we can be doing right now to help out candidates that will go and not only respect our rights, but they will work to support and strengthen our right to keep and bear arms. But they can't get there without our help. You know, we like to complain a lot about politicians, but we've got a role to play as well. We've got to make sure that the right people are there to do the right thing. And frankly, we've got to make sure that our voices are so loud that even if we don't get the right people in there, we get the wrong people to do the right thing. So thank you for showing up. Thank you for speaking out. Thank you for supporting the right to keep and bear arms. And let's fight like hell till November and beyond. Thank you.
There you go. The March for Our Rights. Next hour, again, we'll talk with Zina Amirani, the organizer of the March for Our Rights, about the rally in L.A. Chuck Michelle is going to join us as well next hour, sticking with a California theme. An alert out over the weekend, a massive data breach, along with significant registration problems with California Department of Justice's quote-unquote assault weapon registration system. Never good to hear those words, data breach and gun registration system. Yeah, Tim Lee, Center for Individual Freedom in Hour 3. Also, Morgan Sachs out at the March for Our Rights, the D.C. organizer. Plus, we have our hero of the day. We have our deal of the day, good guy. We've got to look at maybe the short list for Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominees and all of the day's top Second Amendment news and information headed your way. Stick around when we return. Selena Zito, author of The Great Revolt, joins us. We'll be back with more Cam and Company next.
Let me ask you a simple question. Do you believe you have a right to defend yourself and your family with a firearm in your own home? 4 Supreme Court justices say you do, but 4 say you don't, because the deciding vote announced he's retiring. And your most fundamental right to self-defense could be extinguished. This is our opportunity to protect the one freedom that guarantees all the others. The freedom that makes America different from every other country on earth. The Second Amendment is at stake. America is at stake. We are the last place on earth that still believes in the fundamental God-given right of self-defense. And we don't care if we're the last ones in the arena. We will never, ever stop fighting for this freedom. We're the National Rifle Association of America, and we're freedom's safest place.
It's as patriotic as it gets. A gathering in the heartland of folks from all 50 states. Welders, salesmen, farmers, accountants, soldiers, first responders. Here, we're all the same. Here, we are all race fans. We are proud of our country, proud of our military, proud of our drivers. We proudly stand for our national anthem. And we have a great reverence for names like Yarborough, Earnhardt, Waltrip, and Gordon. Yes, there are other NASCAR races, but this one is special. 500 temper flaring, finger-waving, ego-busting 15-second laps. And deep into the warm August night, hardly a seat in the last great Coliseum will be used. You see, this isn't just a race. This is America's night race.
Speaking with Cole McCullough with the NRA Competitive Shooting Division. Cole, welcome back to the program. Lots of things happening at the NRA Competitive Shooting Division. What's going on?
Absolutely. We've taken the last year or so to begin to really rebuild the Competition Shooting Division in a lot of ways and to prepare for our national matches at Camp Atterbury, Indiana for High Power and back to Camp Perry for Pistol and for Bianchi Cup and our World Action Pistol Championship, which is coming up in a few weeks.
Cole, I don't know how you do it, man. How do you keep all this straight? Your competitive shooting division at NRA is involved in so many things. It's give people an idea what y'all do.
Right. I mean, there's over 12,000 sanctioned NRA matches every year. That's a huge number in itself. But when you combine it about 19 different disciplines of shooting, you really have an awful lot of things. And that doesn't even count the ones that NRA supports that we don't run.
And you mentioned some of the big ones. Camp Atterbury, Camp Perry for Pistol, there's Bianchi. But the competitive shooting division's for everybody, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a great way. There's depends upon what type of shooting you like to do, whether it's small bore or high power precision pistol or even action pistol shooting. There's a lot of different things and a lot of different ways you can get into competitive shooting.
And people think about the more traditional, but you talk about action and three-gun. There's lots of new, neat things happening in competitive shooting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's just, for example, the Daisy has a big match that's coming up where kids from all over the country come in and have teams. NRA is going to be there representing that. There's national muzzle loading championships that are coming up. There's over 1,000 shooters that come to that. NRA supports that. There's just an awful lot of different ways that people can be involved in competitive shooting, and it's stuff that you can do.
It's really cool. It spans the generations.
Indeed. It spans every good type of responsible gun-owning citizen, and that's what the NRA is all about.
How do we get more information?
You can just go to, you can Google the NRA Competitive Shooting Division online, and it'll take you right to the website and find all that.
Cole McCullough, NRA Competitive Shooting Division, something for everyone there, so check them out, and thank you for what you do every day. Thanks for being on the program.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Welcome back to Cam and Company right here on NRA TV. Cam Edwards, your host. We will be talking next hour with Chuck Michel from the California Rifle and Pistol Association about more problems with California's quote-unquote assault weapons registration system. Had some questions about this online as well. Tweeted something out about this earlier, and somebody said, I thought that these were banned. Well, so they are. So, again, they've revised the definition of what a quote-unquote assault weapon is in California for, I believe, the third time since 1998. They've come up with a brand-new definition. And if you continue to own one of these guns that California has now suddenly declared to be quote-unquote assault weapons, then you have to register them with the state of California. You can also make them California-compliant featureless rifles, so they would not have any of the offending cosmetic features that turn a semi-automatic rifle into a quote-unquote assault weapon. And if you don't have any of the features, then they're not considered a quote-unquote assault weapon by California DOJ, even though it's the same caliber and whatever. Yeah, I know. Doesn't make any sense. But they'll get around to it. Give them time, and that's the next step, banning the featureless rifles. They do this piece by piece incrementally, and this is where we are right now in the state of California. So if you did not turn your gun into a featureless rifle, you had to register your firearm with the state of California, and good luck trying to do so. If you went online, the portal that you were supposed to use was crashing. Maybe sometimes you'd get halfway through the process. Maybe sometimes you get all the way through the process, and then it would crash. And so did you register or not? I'm not really sure. It's a good thing that, you know, it's not like a crime to not register this firearm. I mean, it's been all kinds of problems. And then you add on to that quote, massive data breach that California Rifle and Pistol Association sent out an alert over the weekend. And again, you have to start to wonder, is this really a bug or is this a feature in the system? Is this another way to make it so incredibly problematic to try to be a legal gun owner in California that you just say, forget it. I'm not going to be a gun owner anymore. Fine, you win. I'll get rid of my guns. That's kind of what they're counting on. So we'll talk about it again with Chuck Michelle a little bit later on in the hour. Selena Zito going to join us here in just a moment or two. Her latest column, Will Resistance Summer Dampen the Democrats' Big Autumn? Talking about, it's the Independence Day at the Statue of Liberty. Therese Patricia Okumu starting to climb up the Statue of Liberty, holding a T-shirt with Trump Care Makes Us Sick and Rise and Resist on the other side. Selena says what she did was get a lot of attention on her, less on her stated issue. He says, she writes, Okumu, who goes by her middle name of Patricia, immigrated to the U.S. from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, has a long history of political protests in her adopted country, certainly isn't the first person to use the Statue of Liberty as their stage to dramatically air their grievances in this country, and she won't be the last. You have to wonder, she writes, how her theatrics, or perhaps dozens of others, hopefully not as dramatic, will move voters in this November's midterm elections. We saw over the weekend this became news when Steve Bannon was at a bookstore in Richmond, Black Swan Books, and apparently another customer there at Black Swan Books started yelling at Steve Bannon. So the owner of the bookstore asked the woman to leave, and the woman refused. So the owner of the bookstore said, okay, I guess I'm going to have to call the police then. Then she left, and Cameron, you've seen, like, the left is now tweeting out this guy's phone number and address and...
Right.
Because how dare you call the police on somebody in your store yelling at another customer in your store?
And I forget, is it Philippe Raines, a former Clinton guy, said, oh, it's you can go to their website and all this information is right there. I'm just providing a public service. It's as disingenuous as it gets. So it's gotten to the point where if you serve somebody, you're bad. If you call the cops on somebody, you're bad. There's really no winning. And then I don't know, Molly something, this prominent blue check says, conservatives, you should limit yourself to Chick-fil-A and Hobby Lobby. And, you know, she says it with a little sarcasm, a little joke, but it's really not funny when you're starting to make statements like that, because at the end of the day, she wishes conservatives would only shop at Chick-fil-A and Hobby Lobby. She would be happy if we didn't go to a bookstore or the Red Hen or any of those other places.
You know, and it's interesting, too. I just saw that right before we went on the air. And I guess it was like last August, because it was the weekend of Charlottesville. I had a big, long Twitter rant about, I'm not Antifa. I'm not alt-right. I'm not a Nazi. I'm not a commie. I'm a normal American. And I got, a fair amount of retweets and follows. And Molly actually followed me for that. And it was a message of inclusivity. It was a message of, I don't have to agree with you. We don't have to agree with each other all of the time. There are things that we can find in common. And that's the only reason why I follow Molly Young Fast, is because she followed me based on that. And so I saw that and I was like, that's not my tribe. That was my whole Twitter thing, was this is my tribe. Since we're reverting to tribal politics, here's my tribe. And my tribe doesn't yell at people in bookstores or Chick-fil-A or Mexican restaurants. My tribe doesn't do that. It just doesn't. Because my tribe thinks that if you do that, A, the person that you're yelling at is not likely to change their mind based on you yelling at them in a bookstore or a restaurant or on the street. And B, the people around who are watching this display are also not likely, they're not more likely to agree with you because you see them yelling at somebody. I just don't think it's a very good way to get your point across. So yeah, there is that attitude out there though, right? And right now, if you kind of, you know, read the letter of the law that they're attempting to lay down, is if you work in the Trump administration, right? If you're part of Team Trump, if you're part of Trump land, so if you're Sarah Sanders, Steve Bannon used to work there, Stephen Miller, if your last name is Trump, maybe if you rented Trump Tower, well, I haven't gotten quite that far yet. But right now, you know, if you're in the administration or you were in the administration, game on. Do you think it's going to stay that way? Because again, they're making up these rules apparently as they go along. So are they going to be satiated and satisfied to, well, we'll only confine our protests. We'll only confine our yelling, to those in the administration. What if you live out in middle America and you never run across somebody in the administration? You got to get your vengeance somehow, right? So maybe somebody wearing a Make America Great Again hat, maybe that's all you need. You can snatch that hat right off their head. You could push them off their bicycle. You can do whatever. Because, you know, chances of you running into Sarah Sanders, slim to none. So you got to do something. And again, we've seen those acts take place, and we've seen those acts excused. So I sooner or later, you know, if you're suspected of voting the wrong way, maybe even just suspected of wrong think, you know, all right, game on for you too. I mean, heck, they went after Stephen King, Cameron.
Well, and over the weekend, I noticed that the guy who started the hashtag walk away, he went to a New York camera store, and the guy said he didn't feel comfortable selling him something. So it is going to spread. I mean, if you have any sort of notoriety, if they can picture you from somewhere, you know, it's only going to get worse, especially when you have prominent conservatives like Jennifer Rubin saying that Sarah Sanders should have a life sentence of the red hands. It's going to get worse, and it's going to get uglier.
You know, I was actually thinking about this today, too. I wonder what this does for entrepreneurship in this country. And does it, I mean, if you're thinking about starting a small business right now, if you're thinking about starting up a restaurant, something that's in the service industry, are you less likely? I'm not saying it's going to be your defining issue, but is it something you're starting to think about now? Because the weird thing is, like, it's not even that you're not allowed to be non-political. You're not allowed to be neutral. There's no Switzerland. You know, sooner or later, it's if you're not standing with us, then you're against us, right? So if you're not actively banning people that you disagree with politically from your restaurant, well, then you deserve to be protested. I mean, there are absolutely people out there who believe that. So, I mean, is that enough to, if you're on the fence, or again, maybe not everybody, but I know if I were starting a restaurant right now, I'd be thinking about it. Maybe not in terms of, is this going to seal the deal for me opening up a restaurant or not? Might influence location. Might not be looking at opening up a restaurant in, let's say, Portland, Oregon right now. Or even, heck, even Washington, D.C. Maybe look for a place that's not quite so driven by politics, or at least according to the headlines that we see every day, not quite so driven by politics. And by the way, when you find that place, let me know, because their tourism bureau and their you know, relocation agencies probably do booming business these days. All right, Selena Zito is with us on the program right now. Selena, how are you today? Oh, momentarily, we've got Selena joining us here. Again, Selena's latest column, you can find it at the Washington Examiner. Will resistance summer dampen the Democrats' big autumn? And Selena Zito is with us now. Hey, Selena.
Hey, how are you? Sorry about that. I'm in the State House Capitol in Ohio, and I didn't realize there wasn't any service in here.
That's all right. I appreciate you taking a few minutes away from actual work to talk with us about your column. Will resistance summer dampen the Democrats' big autumn? We were actually talking about your column for the last few minutes. You know, not only the protest on Independence Day outside of the at the Statue of Liberty, but over the weekend, Steve Bannon yelled at in a bookstore, and then when the bookstore owner in Richmond, Virginia, told the lady, hey, don't yell at the guy. You need to leave. She refused to leave. He said, all right, I'm going to have to call the police. Now the left's going after him, Selena, for just wanting to have a bookstore where everybody can come in and sell books.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is sustainable in terms of the Democrats' message getting stomped on by the more activated activist side of their base. It hurts their message of better deal. It hurts their opportunities that they could have had if they would have if they could just stick with a more economic message, right? And that's the problem. They don't have that. Abolish ICE is taking over. Resistance, resist, and just complete civil discourse. This does not win over those reluctant Trump voters in the suburbs that the Democrats need to win the House seats to get a majority.
And I think that there is this growing recognition, certainly among the already elected officials, Selena, folks like, you know, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, of, okay, we need to give people a reason to vote for us beyond the base. We need to start thinking about the general election. The base has no interest. I mean, I shouldn't say the base has no interest in that, because I believe that among the base, they truly do believe, oh no, this is what the American people want. They want Medicare for all. They want college tuition. They don't paid for. They, you know, they want all this free stuff, and they want basically New York City values and San Francisco values imposed on rural America. That's what they're waiting for.
Yeah, and you know, win over swing independent voters with that. What's going to happen is they're either going to vote Republican or stay home, and that's a problem for the Democrats. You know, that's their big challenge that they have not come to grips with yet.
You write that resistance activists celebrated this protester who scaled the bottom part of the Statue of Liberty, celebrated her on social media, calling her a hero and courageous for her theatrical and illegal protest. You write, if the resistance becomes a summer of theatrics, it's hard to imagine a blue wave taking out as many Republican House members as leadership hoped, squandering an opportunity that was theirs for the taking and likely fracturing the Democratic Party even more than it already is. Now, I think you add in, on top of that, what's coming tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, President Trump makes his selection for the Supreme Court. And all of a sudden now, you're going to have those fractures in the Democratic Party grow even wider. If, for instance, the Republican coalition holds together, or even if a couple of Republicans peel away, those red state Democrats, Selena, that are going to be told by their voters back at home, hey, we want you to confirm this justice, they're going to become traitors to their party if they do so, if they listen to their constituents.
It's going to be a rough summer for red state Democrats. Now, I'm not saying this means that Republicans win. I'm just saying that Democrats need to win. They need to get their message under control. If it goes wild this summer, and I suspect it will, then I think that this blue wave that everyone's been talking about isn't actually going to happen. And they can only blame themselves because they have squandered it. And this is what happens when you don't understand your base, you don't understand what's going on with them, and you're trying to control them rather than listen to them. Republicans have faced that problem before.
Talking again with our friend Selena Zito, author of The Great Revolt, along with Brad Todd. Selena, I appreciate you coming on the program. Dare I ask what you're doing in the Ohio State House today?
You'll see it in my story next week.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Selena Zito, I appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much for your patience. I apologize for that.
No worries. We'll talk again. Selena Zito with us here on Cam and Company. Coming up, we're going to talk more about that story out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're not saving this one for Hero of the Day. We have a whole other armed citizen story for you coming to the top of hour three. But this video actually did go nationwide. People have been talking about this. They've been sharing this on their Facebook pages. Did you see what happened at that restaurant? They don't even know where this took place. Most people couldn't tell you this was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This is how it was described to me multiple times over the weekend. Did you see that story? It was a restaurant, and this guy comes in, and he's in all white, and he looks like maybe he works there. And all of a sudden, he just punches this chef, and then another woman pulls out her gun and scares him away. And that's pretty much what happened. And the story itself has gone absolutely viral. It is a very vivid and compelling reminder. that self-defense is a human right. And we'll talk more about this after a quick timeout. So stick around. Much more Cam and Company still to come. We're spending some time with Butch Whiting from Cryptek. Butch, how are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm excellent. And Jen Dolphin from Prefix. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing great, thanks.
And this is an absolute beautiful beast behind us right here. What are we looking at?
Well, this is a very special and unique project. This is the Cryptek Edition Dodge Ram Minotaur 1500. And it's an aftermarket vehicle that Prefix, Jan's company, has assembled in collaboration with Cryptek, the NRA, and several other great brands in the industry.
So this is, we as NRA members, we've got the opportunity to actually win this truck, right?
Well, there's going to be 150 of these trucks made, but this truck specifically, NRA members are going to be able to win, not just the truck, but an absolute amazing package of gear from great brands such as Weatherby, Leupold, Springfield Armory, Tenzing, Boyd Harness, Wiley X. There's about $25,000, Nosler ammo. There's about $25,000 of additional outdoor gear that's going to come along with this truck. And some lucky NRA winner is going to, our member is actually going to be able to win this truck that's well over $100,000.
Golly, okay. We're gonna talk more about how folks can win this. But first, Jan, let's talk about what's involved in this actual, you know, Dodge Ram Minotaur. What makes it so different and special?
Oh, absolutely. So just to clarify, Prefix, we're the company that builds most of the concept cars and prototypes for the auto industry. But every couple of years, we have a little fun. We find a vehicle that we think we could make better or enhance, or we think there's a niche market for. And so the Minotaur truck was built as an awesome daily driver. It's kind of built as the as an equivalent engineering-wise, like a Baja race truck. So on the highway, it's fantastic. But it's got 14 inches of suspension travel. It's the real deal. You can jump this thing, and it is just a beast.
Well, as somebody who actually owns a Dodge Ram, I can tell you that my Dodge Ram 1500 looks nothing like this Dodge Ram. I'm drooling right now. I'm having to actually keep my mouth closed.
That's perfect.
And so, you talk about the suspension. What about under the hood? What are we looking at in terms of, you know, horsepower? And
well, this comes with the 5.7 Hemi, which is a great motor for this truck. We do offer an optional supercharger. Like I said, we're building 150 of these. It's very low volume production. We love that exclusivity because that means that there's a good chance that the guys that own them are going to be the only guys in town that have them. And as Butch said, then there's one lucky guy who's going to get not only to win a Minotaur truck, but it's also going to be loaded with the prize package. So this
we're going to be able to start entering this lottery or this raffle here early March, and this is going to run for a year. Is that right?
That's my understanding. The NRA will really make an entire launch at the convention this year and open it up, and then all of the marketing and collateral start to go out and open up to NRA members. And then my understanding is that next year at the 2019 convention, they're going to pull a name out of a hat and somebody's going to win over $100,000 package.
I'm going to be entering. Are you going to be entering, Butch? Are you eligible? You're eligible, right?
I think so.
I mean, it's just a random drawing. All right,
if I won it, I'd turn it back in. You know, that's always cool when that happens.
And re-raffle it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a bold move for you, Butch.
Right.
I don't know that I'd be that generous, but this is amazing. And so tell me from your perspective, what was it like being involved in this project?
Well, it's kind of an interesting deal. When Prefix reached out to me and we started to have the discussion, hey, we'd like to talk to Cryptek about doing a Cryptek Edition Dodge Ram truck, you know, you have to be like, first call's like, yeah, right, whatever, you know? But then as we started the relationship and we started to understand what they were looking for and how this truck was a very, you know, badass vehicle, and they felt that it our brand nested well with the attitude of the truck.
He's being too nice. we knew we had done a lot of testing with these vehicles. We already had started selling them, and I was looking for something that we could do to really increase the excitement. And when we learned about Cryptek and their camo pattern, it was the attitude that this truck needed. It's exactly what it needed. So starting to work with Butch, kind of understanding the background of their company, Prefix is known, our tagline is excellence is expected, and we knew what we were putting into the vehicle. But to add this Cryptek attitude, very patriotic, very cutting edge, awesome look to the truck was just perfect. And we're getting the response because of it, for sure.
Well, for those who can't put down a deposit, we can buy a raffle ticket. NRABigTruckGiveaway.org. That's going to be the website that you need to go to enter this.
Welcome back to Cam and Company. Cam Edwards, your host. Glad to be with you today. Zena Amirani of March for Our Rights next hour. In hour three, Morgan Sachs with March for Our Rights. And right now, I want to welcome to the program. We were just showing you that video a couple minutes ago out of a Milwaukee, Wisconsin restaurant where a dude just walks into the kitchen, sucker punches a restaurant employee there, and then her coworker able to protect her with her legally carried firearm. Join us right now. Wisconsin's own Argo J is with us on Twitter at Argo J. That'd be three A's. How are you, Jay?
How you doing? I'm great. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I said this is one of those stories where it's definitely getting national attention. People are sharing this on their social media. I'm not sure how many people are even aware that this happened in Milwaukee. It's just, did you see that video from the restaurant where the guy walks in and he punches that woman, and then the other woman pulls a gun and he, you know, backs off? I mean, that's how people are describing it. That's what people are taking away from it. It's such a visceral, visual reminder, Jay, that violence can happen anywhere and you need to be able to protect yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. And ironically, this is not the first time, and excuse me, I'm a little bit hoarse. I've been screaming. I worked security at a music festival the last 11 days, so I don't have much of a voice. But ironically, this is not the first time that's happened at a George Webb. The very first time that happened at a George Webb was in 2013, where some individuals came into a George Webb restaurant. It's a chain of restaurants, kind of like a Waffle House type of deal. And they came into the restaurant drunk and acting out and real belligerent. The waitress notified police that she didn't want to deal with the customers or whatnot. They got into a fight, and one of the employees, a male employee, stepped up to defend her and was shot and killed at George Webb. So it's not the first time that that's happened. And fortunately, this time, this young lady was able to draw her weapon and defend herself and defend her, you know, fellow employees and whatnot, and prevent anything further from happening. So,
absolutely. So, is this the talk of the local community right now?
Honestly, I didn't even know it was in Milwaukee either until I got the notification from you guys. I had seen it on social media, but like I said, I've been tied up for the last 11 days, man. I've been working 18 hours a day at this music festival, I've just been detached from the world. So, but you know, it's just a horrific event. Like that punch was brutal. You know, that punch alone could have killed that lady, because you know she could have fallen, hit her head,
yeah,
you know, any kind of thing. It was just a bad situation.
And you know, that's the thing, man. If you had asked that woman like last week, the concealed carry holder, and I'm sure that there would be plenty of anti-gun advocates who, you know, given you know the chance, would have asked her, "You really think you need to carry a gun while you're at work? What do you think is going to happen to you while you're in the kitchen? Why on earth do you want to? I mean, honestly, right? That's their attitude. Why, Jay? Why do you want to carry a gun everywhere? What do you think is going to happen to you? Well, that's what could happen to you, right? And thankfully, again, this woman is alive. Her coworker's alive. From what I understand, right, the concealed carry holder actually quit and maybe is looking for, you know, another job. But I got to tell you, I'm really glad she was working that shift that night.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it is a dangerous job. And people don't think that that's a dangerous job. You know, you're working in the kitchen, but the store stays open after clubs let out here. So, you know, 2 a.m, people are high and intoxicated from whatever they've been doing or whatnot. And, you know, bad things happen. And it's just very unfortunate that those kind of things are taking place in society, but they are taking place in society. And that is absolutely why people need to carry wherever they go, because you never know when evil is going to pop its head up and face you. And as you see in this video, it showed up.
You know, the other thing I wanted to bring up is that in this incident, the firearm was pulled, but the trigger was never pulled. There was no discharge. Look, in my mind, this is still very much a defensive gun use, Jay. But
absolutely.
But again, there are gun control activists who is, oh, no, no, no. You know, unless apparently it's weird. unless you actually shoot and kill somebody in self-defense, they actually don't consider anything other than that to be a case of armed self-defense. This is how I think every gun owner would prefer a confrontation play out, that you pull your firearm, all of a sudden that threat has somewhere else they got to be.
And it's good. And if you're trained with your weapon, you know, you're taught to not pull the trigger unless you absolutely have to. Okay. She did draw her weapon and the guy was getting close, but as soon as he saw that barrel, he backed off and she did the absolute right thing, by not pulling the trigger. I guess there's some people who can argue, oh, but he's bigger than her. He's stronger than her. There's, you know, such thing as disparity of force and all that. But, that's all semantics at that point. Just having that firearm was enough of a deterrent to prevent him from doing anything further. And that was absolutely great. So I'm very proud of her. And I hope that she finds another job in a safer place and where she doesn't feel like, you know, her life would be threatened and she can move on from this.
Absolutely. Talking with Argo Jay up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hopefully, Jay, everything went well for you during the last 11 days of the music festival. 18 hours a day. Like, see, one day at a music festival, that sounds fun. 11 straight days, that does not sound fun.
Oh, man, it's the largest music festival in the world, man. We have so many stages on 44 acres, man, right on the lakefront. All kinds of bands from all over the place. Last night was Cheap Trick. We had some... there were still, you know, hundreds of other bands performing that day. So we have literally hundreds of bands performing on a day-to-day basis, and it's just a whole lot, man. A lot of drunk people, a lot of fighting, you know, things like that. But it was a good time, though. It was a good time.
Well, go sleep for like 18 hours, man. We appreciate you coming on the program. It's good talk with you, and we'll do this again soon.
No worries. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you guys having me on again.
You bet, Jay. Argo Jay joining us here on Cam and Company. All right, Cheap Trick. That'd be fun. You ever seen Cheap Trick live, Cameron?
I didn't, but it's funny that he was on. I saw, for some reason, you get into this Twitter, you know, rabbit hole. For some reason, I found the Gin Blossoms Twitter page, and they had just said that they were at Milwaukee's Summerfest. Very strange to have Jay on today talking about that Summerfest. But it sounds like an incredible event.
He said 44 acres, and I'm thinking, well, I have, like, almost 40. They do have, like, these festies in Virginia. Maybe we just need to have, you know, a festival in my place.
Farmville Fest?
It could happen. I'm not sure what the lineup would be, but, stranger things have happened. All right, coming up. Top of the hour, we've got more of the day's top Second Amendment news and information for you. Also, we've got a couple of minutes here. So I was ran across this story in my research today, getting ready for the show, from Think Progress, the far left-leaning website. Headline, Colorado schools are arming teachers with no state oversight and few training standards. 30 school districts and charter schools have given teachers the okay to bring firearms into the classroom. And as it turns out, this piece by Danielle McLean is largely based on a piece that was written the day before at the Denver Post. Headline, at least 30 Colorado school districts and charter schools allow teachers to carry guns, but no statewide training standards regulate them. This is interesting because this has been the law for quite some time. As a matter of fact, this was actually the subject of legislation in Colorado last year. That would have, made it easier, would have established these sort of guardian programs in Colorado like they have in Texas. But while that bill was making its way through the legislature, people like Laura Carno were explaining to lawmakers, look, this is happening. The state law already allows school districts to designate staff as armed security. So they can do this. This would just make it easier. This would actually allow for some state standards. And it's weird because the gun control activists opposed it. They did. They opposed that legislation. And now you've got the Denver Post in this sort of hand-wringing article. Oh, my gosh. There are dozens of districts around the state of Colorado with their armed school staff, and there's little state oversight. We should do something about this. You guys could have done something about it last year. You might want to ask those, quote-unquote, common-sense gun safety activists why they were opposed to actually having some state oversight, to having a state standard. Because that could have been the law in Colorado right now. And it wasn't gun owners standing in the way. It was actually gun owners proposing it. It was the gun control activists that didn't want to see this come to pass. So over at Think Progress, Danielle McLean says there are a number of issues with allowing educators a license to carry in schools. As Rick Myers, executive director of the Major Cities Chiefs Association, explained to the Denver Post, police officers receive hundreds of hours of training learning how when they're supposed to shoot and how to avoid hitting innocent people, far more training than what the teachers receive. Meanwhile, she writes, the data is clear that more guns in school increases the likelihood of a gun-related accident. In March, she writes, a teacher at a Seaside, California high school accidentally fired a gun inside a classroom, injuring a student. She doesn't say that that teacher illegally brought the gun into school, nor does she talk about the law enforcement officers who are actually instructing these educators. One would think if law enforcement had an issue with it, they wouldn't be educating the educators, would they? All right, stick around. Hour two of Cam and Company, fueled by Hornady. It's coming up next.
Second Amendment in the U.S. Constitution is very personal for me. When the people came to the streets and demonstrated against the regime, demanding their own rights, they get cracked on by the violence of the government. The people get tortured, executed, assassinated, hanging the people in the streets. These things I saw with my eyes. That's part of my experience. Just imagine if you get successful, you remove your Second Amendment from your Constitution completely. But who knows, in 20 years, 25 years, maybe situation get changed. But any single person should have a right to defend themselves and defend their families.
Let me ask you a simple question. Do you believe you have a right to defend yourself and your family with a firearm in your own home? Four Supreme Court justices say you do, but four say you don't, because the deciding vote announced he's retiring. And your most fundamental right to self-defense could be extinguished. This is our opportunity to protect the one freedom that guarantees all the others, the freedom that makes America different from every other country on earth. The Second Amendment is at stake. America is at stake. We are the last place on earth that still believes in the fundamental God-given right of self-defense. And we don't care if we're the last ones in the arena. We will never, ever stop fighting for this freedom. We're the National Rifle Association of America, and we're freedom's safest place.
I do know what it's like to be vulnerable. I know what it's like to feel like you can't protect your children or yourself. And it's terrifying when you have a spouse, whether it be husband or wife, that's serving overseas thousands of miles away. And you're the only one there to stand up for yourself, to stand up for your home, for your little kid that's right there next to you. I support the Second Amendment because of that. I support the NRA because they support my right to protect my kids. Everybody has a right to life, and you have the right to protect that. And nobody has the right to take it away from you.
Everyone understands the importance of securing our public places. That's why every major corporate campus and office tower, every sporting event, celebrity award show, and government building, all of it is protected by multiple layers of security. But when it comes to our most precious resource, not gold or oil or precious jewels, our children, we utterly fail to protect them at school every single day. Each day that goes by, our banks and businesses are better protected than our children. That's a national outrage. NRA's School Shield program has already made world-class security resources available to hundreds of American schools. It's free of politics, and it's free of charge. If your child's school isn't protected, ask them to call School Shield today. We're the National Rifle Association of America, guardians of our school children and freedom's safest place. You're watching NRA TV with Cam Edwards.
Welcome back. Hour two of Cam and Company, fueled by Hornady, starts right this second here on NRA TV. Cam Edwards, your host, coming to you from beautiful downtown Farmville, Virginia. Zena Amirani of the March for Our Rights going to join us later on in the hour. We'll talk about the L.A. rally over the weekend. Chuck Michel, president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, joining us as well. And, of course, we are now 6 hours away from President Donald Trump making the announcement of the person who he will nominate to replace Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court. I saw somebody snarkily talk about how he should invite all of the candidates, Cameron, out there, and then one by one eliminate them over the course of the hour. And, you know, I'd watch. I'll be honest. I would totally watch that.
I would. I was thinking about it today. It's like I was, tonight. This is like much must-see TV for people like us. I'm giddy about this. I'm really excited. I'm planning on having some food and drinks ready to watch. This is going to be a big event. It's one of the most important things a president can do, if not the most important.
It is. It absolutely is. And you're right. You might as well make an event out of it. Have people over. Have some small plates, some tapas, if you will, there in the D.C. area. I know tapas is a big thing. Because, listen, the announcement's coming at 9 o'clock. So from about 9:10 until probably midnight, you're going to have, nonstop coverage of the candidate. There'll be researchers going back through every legal opinion that they've issued, every comment that they've made. And so what we've heard, but again, all of this is speculation. Nobody really knows anything. It's just, the Washington whispers. And because there's no way, again, to confirm these whispers, you just go ahead and put it out there. But what we've heard is that the short list of candidates, Brett Kavanaugh of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, Thomas Hardiman, who I believe is on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, Amy Coney Barrett, who's on the Seventh Circuit, and Raymond Kethledge, who I forget what circuit Judge Kethledge is on. He's on the Sixth, I believe, up in Michigan. So just doing a wee bit of research, virtually every one of these judges, with the exception of Amy Coney Barrett, because she's only been on the bench, I think, since October of last year. She hasn't heard any Second Amendment cases. Virtually every one of these judges, when a Second Amendment case has come before them, has treated the Second Amendment like it's a real constitutional right. We haven't seen from them what we've seen from other lower courts and other judges on lower courts, where it's this sort of second class right, or it's a right that's kind of important, but what's really important is public safety. And so if a government says, well, we're passing this gun control law in the name of public safety, we need to defer to the government, even if it actually infringes. And we acknowledge that it infringes, doesn't just regulate, but infringes on a right. It's still okay because it's in the name of public safety. There's none of that nonsense from the judges on the short list, at least from what we've the short list that we've heard anyway. Over at National Review a couple days ago, Donald Burke had a piece on Judge Raymond Kethledge and the Second Amendment. Said that the most important Second Amendment case to come before the Sixth Circuit in the last few years is Tyler versus Hillsdale County Sheriff's Department. Was dealt with a federal statute that barred anybody who had ever been involuntarily committed from owning a gun. Mr. Tyler, the plaintiff in this case, Clifford Tyler, was barred by statute from legally owning a gun because he had been involuntarily committed 28 years earlier. That was his only, contact with inpatient institutionalization for mental health issues 28 years earlier. In a divided vote, the court held that Tyler had plausibly alleged that the statute violated his Second Amendment rights. National Review reports Judge Kethledge went further still Joining an opinion by Judge Sutton, he concluded that the statute as applied to Mr. Tyler did violate the Second Amendment because Tyler had not received an individual adjudication before he lost his rights. In other words, he had not been considered as an individual. As you met this criteria, someone's checked these boxes here, and therefore you've lost your rights. Judge Kethledge, in this case, recognized that under Heller, the government is required to show that Mr. Tyler fell into one of these historically recognized categories of convicted felons, those, again, adjudicated mentally defective, before it could strip him of his Second Amendment rights. And he said that the government can't merely argue about interests and tailoring the law, but provide gun owners like Tyler an individual adjudication as to their mental health. You're talking about an individual right. Well, there needs to be some sort of individual adjudication here. As the National Review points out, his commitment to the Second Amendment extends beyond the bench. Public speeches he's taught students and lawyers about originalism. Suggested in a Federalist Society panel on the Second Amendment that, quote, the lower courts have not been faithfully applying Heller as to methodology and also as to the sort of rigor of their scrutiny. In response to the misconception that the Second Amendment only applies to muskets, he explained that today the Second Amendment protects modern firearms, quote, just like the First Amendment protects the Internet. And by the way, this should not be a controversial position. The Supreme Court itself, in a unanimous opinion, or unanimous guidance, I should say, to the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court in the Catano case, affirmed that very fact, that the Second Amendment does not just apply to firearms that were around in 1791. National Review points out that Judge Kethledge has hunted in northern Michigan every year for over two decades and also is a active concealed carry holder. So that's this was written, by the way, by Donald Burke, who clerked for Judge Kethledge from 2009 to 2010 and now practices in Washington, D.C. So that's a little snapshot of Judge Kethledge, widely seen as one of the members of the short list here for this open seat. Thomas Hardiman, L.A. Times, actually quoted one gun control activist as saying that he is a Second Amendment extremist. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Third Circuit, Drake versus Philco, upheld a law requiring people who wanted a gun permit to demonstrate, quote, justifiable need. He wrote a dissent saying that, no, you should not have to justify a need or have a justifiable need to carry a firearm, given that you've got a right to bear arms. This is a case brought out of New Jersey. Now, there is new litigation that is challenging New Jersey's carry laws once again because the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals struck down Washington, D.C.'s good cause requirement. So now we're having another go at it in places like New Jersey and New York State. Judge Hardiman, dissenting with the Third Circuit, but ultimately in agreement with what the Circuit Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit ruled, said that self-defense happens inside and outside of the home. He said New Jersey has decided that fewer handguns legally carried in public means less crime. It's obvious that the justifiable need requirement functions as a rationing system designed to limit the number of handguns carried in New Jersey. That is true. Absolutely true. And again, we've seen this coming out of the state of New Jersey with Governor Phil Murphy. So you've got some case law from Judge Hardiman there on the Third Circuit in support of the individual right to carry as well. We talked about Judge Kavanaugh on a Friday's program writing a dissent in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals when that court upheld D.C.'s semi-auto ban. As I said, Judge Amy Coney Barrett has been on the bench just a short period of time, so she has not heard any Second Amendment cases. But just doing a quick a reading of these judges and their background on the Second Amendment, I have to say there were, you know, no red flags that that went up flying, thankfully. Not that I had expected that. I mean, again, Donald Trump has talked about the importance of the Second Amendment. It would have been really shocking had there been any red flags. But instead, what we see are that each of these judges have, while they've been on the bench, been able to look at not only what the Second Amendment says and clearly means, but they've actually gone back and they've read Heller and they've read the McDonald decision. It's not like these are activist judges that are just, you know, making up the law as they go along. They're actually looking at what it's those judges that are upholding all of these gun control laws, like California's good cause requirement, which the Ninth Circuit upheld in the Peruta case, or Maryland's ban on semi-automatic firearms, which was upheld by the Fourth Circuit recently. Those are the activist judges that are actually misreading Heller. Those judges that have actually looked at what the Supreme Court has said in both Heller and McDonald, as well as some of the dissents that have come out from Supreme Court justices when the court has not heard a case like Peruta or Highland Park, Illinois, dealing with that community's ban on quote-unquote assault weapons. These judges that have actually considered what the high court have said or has said in the past, they've come to that conclusion of, yeah, you know what, you do have to treat this like it's a real right, because it is. And it's not a secondary right. It's not, we don't really have those, first of all. But we're not going to, you know, place the Second Amendment at a lower level than we do the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment. It is an individual right. If you don't think it should be an individual right, change the Constitution. Which, by the way, whatever happened to that, Cameron? Remember there was that call to repeal the Second Amendment?
And sure.
That kind of went away.
Well, so we got, you know, we get these articles sent around to all of us. I don't know if you saw the one, they were talking about amending the Second Amendment, you know, pretty much, it's the same concept. You still got to make changes to it. So I would imagine maybe after tonight, depending on who the president picks, that might ramp up again. But it doesn't seem like that's ever going away. And the people who talk about changes that they want really do want to get rid of the Second Amendment. They just don't. They don't say it. A lot of times they're just. And sometimes when they say things like, you know, with gun control and very extreme views, they're not willing to admit what it would take to change or eliminate the Second Amendment. And I think it's a daunting task to them.
It is. I think it is much easier to go find a politician to yell at.
Right.
Than it is to actually go and try to amend the Constitution. Speaking of, do we have that video of Mitch McConnell and the protesters in Louisville, Kentucky? Check this out. You got to listen to the audio of this too. Don't just I'm going to shut up for a second.
Abolish ICE.
We did good. Fellow citizens.
All right. It's the line at the end that just gets me. We did good, fellow citizens. Did you hear me when I called him Turtlehead, Cameron? Called him Turtlehead.
And, of course, you know, the most disturbing part about that video, not to mention the man being harassed like that, was we know where you live, Mitch.
We know where you live.
And then it's the Louisville DSA, which, of course, the DSA, the same party as the wonder child, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which if this is on the right, by the way, as a side note, would, if a Tea Party did this, whoever the darling of the Tea Party was would have been forced to answer for this video. Nobody has forced Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to answer for the video of people in her party. I mean, she's the wonderkind of the left right now. But if my same party did this, whatever. Nobody questioned her about it. But besides the point. So later on yesterday, after this became viral, the Louisville DSA who put this out, they put out some Facebook response. They screenshotted on Twitter saying that the guy who said, we know where you live, Mitch, isn't with us. Which, okay, I don't believe it for a second. Because we've seen videos. I saw a video yesterday of Trump supporters or conservatives or some rally on the right. They kicked out these obvious white nationalists, these like Aryans, neo-Nazis, whatever you want to call them. They were on video kicking them out. So if they were really truly against this person and it wasn't with their group, why didn't they say something? Why didn't they say, hey, come on, man, that's a little much. Hey, you know, even not even in the moment, maybe a few seconds later when they said, we did a good job there. Nobody on camera said, hey, you know, get out of our group. Get out of here. So it makes their denial very not unbelievable to me.
Or when they tweeted it out themselves.
That too. Right. Exactly.
They were the ones that put out the video. Right. I mean, like if they were embarrassed by that.
Have
if they
a
really
disclaimer.
Thought, gee, who's that guy?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, listen, we got Mitch. By the way, we don't know who this schmuck was.
Right.
Do that.
But you're
right. The reason why they didn't do that is because they didn't want to do that, probably because the schmuck was with them. And even if the schmuck wasn't with them, you know what? They agreed with the schmuck. That's the thing. They didn't see anything wrong with it because they were in the moment at the time. And maybe when they got back and they started thinking, this might reflect badly on us. What if Comrade Ocasio-Cortez is called on to answer for our righteous deviation? What have we done to her? Oh, maybe we should try to make amends here. I mean, maybe that was their thought process. I don't know. But, they sure didn't seem to have an issue with it until others had an issue with it. So there you go. Turtlehead. All right. When we come back after a quick timeout, Zina Amirani is going to join us from a March for Our Rights. We'll talk about the L.A. rally as well as the D.C. event. We're going to share with you next hour as well a conversation with Morgan Sachs, the organizer of the D.C. version of the March for Our Rights, taking place this past weekend. Stick around. Much more Cam and Company still to come right after this.
Everyone understands the importance of securing our public places. That's why every major corporate campus and office tower, every sporting event, celebrity award show, and government building, all of it is protected by multiple layers of security. But when it comes to our most precious resource, not gold or oil or precious jewels, our children, we utterly fail to protect them at school every single day. Each day that goes by, our banks and businesses are better protected than our children. That's a national outrage. NRA's School Shield program has already made world-class security resources available to hundreds of American schools. It's free of politics, and it's free of charge. If your child's school isn't protected, ask them to call School Shield today. We're the National Rifle Association of America, guardians of our school children. And freedom's safest place.
It's as patriotic as it gets. A gathering in the heartland of folks from all 50 states. Welders, salesmen, farmers, accountants, soldiers, first responders. Here, we're all the same. Here, we are all race fans. We are proud of our country, proud of our military. Proud of our drivers. We proudly stand for our national anthem, and we have a great reverence for names like Yarborough, Earnhardt, Waltrip, and Gordon. Yes, there are other NASCAR races, but this one is special. 500 temper flaring, finger waving, ego busting 15 second laps, and deep into the warm August night, hardly a seat in the last great Coliseum will be used. You see, this isn't just a race. This is America's night race.
Speaking with Nathan Judd with the NRA CCW course. Welcome, Nathan. What is the NRA CCW course? It's something new, isn't it?
It is new. We're actually teaching it for the first time here in Dallas at annual meeting. It's a new pistol course that is specific for the pistol owner that is looking to obtain their state-issued CCW permit.
So the NRA has a long tradition of education and training, which I love. So this is, I guess, just the next step. So how did this come about?
It came about from our basic pistol course, which most states use currently to meet the requirements, but it doesn't blanket the country the way that we'd like it to. So we developed a one course that's universal, but it's modular so that it meets the state requirements for pretty much any state now. The course can be run from 1 hour up to 16 hours, depending upon what the state requirements are.
So let's talk about that a little bit. So there are different requirements for every state, right?
There are. Some mandate form of training. Some mandate no training at all, constitutional states. Some require training plus a live fire component or a legal addendum that's taught state-specific course of law. That's all encompassed into this one course now.
Wow, that's pretty neat. So a neat addition here from the NRA. Who's going to think of a typical person will take advantage of this?
Typical person is going to be the person that's looking to obtain their state permit. You know, it's titled NRA CCW for a reason. We've come to determine that's the number one most Googled thing for NRA training. So that was the reason for the title. Also, it's going to be for our instructors. We have 120,000 instructors nationwide, and this is going to be an additional rating for them to be able to teach this course in their states.
That's great. So how do we get more information?
NRAinstructors.org. That has all of our training courses and all of our schedules of any courses nationwide.
Nathan Judd, thank you for what you do, and thanks for talking about the NRA CCW course.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back. Thanks again for being a part of this edition of Cam and Company. Got to tell you, the Mother Nature was smiling on Saturday because it was not 95 degrees with 90% humidity in our nation's capital. It was beautiful. Sunny skies, about 80 degrees, but it felt cool. Just absolutely gorgeous weather for the March for Our Rights in our nation's capital. Look at the weather was fine out in L.A. as well. Zena Amirani is with us from March for Our Rights. Zena, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I am excellent. I appreciate you coming on the program. And thank you again for the invite. I had a great time up in Washington, D.C. Got to meet some really great Second Amendment supporters. Got to talk about the importance of our right to keep and bear arms. And I even saw online a stream of the L.A. rally. And I just wanted to follow up and find out how everything went for you out there over the weekend.
Thank you for asking. It went relatively smoothly. We had a couple strange occurrences. I don't know if we've posted about it yet or if my social media team has updated us about it, but there was a man with an axe, and he tried to come out of a crowd. Fortunately, the police did their job and kept him away from us. And we also just had really, really warm weather, so those two were huge setbacks. I thought that I was probably going to pass out a few times. But I really, really appreciate everyone who braved the 100-degree weather and came outside to fight for their rights. Our turnout was pretty good, and everything went really smoothly. We had great speeches, and everyone seemed to really enjoy and be passionate about the cause and why they were out there.
I'm glad to hear that, that the weather did not keep folks away. I do want to backtrack, though, to the guy with the axe for a second, if we can, Zena. Mm-hmm. You had a guy with an axe there show up?
Yeah, it was like an axe or a machete or something. He just kind of like walked onto the street since like pedestrians were still allowed on the street closure we had. And he just had like some kind of bag and he was just like talking to people. And we were like, what? But he seemed kind of like unstable. And suddenly he just pulled out this axe and he just started coming toward people. And we were like, what? Like, and people started like screaming at the police. And then they did their job really well. They removed him immediately, and they kept him away from us.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And, again, reminder that in Los Angeles County, your right to carry requires you to show some sort of good cause and suitable purpose. It's not that it's really just your right to bear arms for self-defense in case, you know, I don't know, some dude shows up with a machete. I'm glad to hear that everybody's okay, Zena. And, you know, the folks that you had out there speaking, obviously in California, you know, you've got a state that is hostile to your rights. We're going to be talking with Chuck Michelle, the president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, here in about 15 minutes about Cal DOJ and their registration system for the quote-unquote assault weapons and the massive data breach that has occurred, apparently, alongside that registration system. I mean, the state of California is, you know, it doesn't want you to be a gun owner. It wants to put every roadblock and impediment in front of you that they can possibly put in front of you to keep you from exercising your right to keep and bear arms. So it must have been really heartening, first of all, just to see that, okay, look, there are other gun owners out here who are willing to speak up and speak up publicly. Because we also live in a day and age where, Zena, because you are taking a public stand in support of your right to keep and bear arms, there are people out there who feel like now you should never be employed. You should, you should never be able to find a job. You should be hounded. You should be excoriated at every opportunity. because you're fighting for your individual rights.
Yeah, you're completely right. When it comes to that, I actually gave a speech on basically exactly the topic you're talking about. I talked about California's gun control laws, especially the new bill that's trying to be passed right now, restricting our constitutional civil liberties from a whole chunk of Americans aged between the ages of 18 and 21. That was the main topic of my speech. My speech aired on Fox National, and I received so much hate for it. My social media wasn't tagged anywhere on Fox. Like, they weren't promoting me, but people looked up my name, found my social media. People, I had no idea who they were, really strange, random people, and attacked me with hateful comments. They attacked me with death threats. They said that they wanted to see how I would react if my, like, future children were on the line, stuff like that. And I was just like, oh, my goodness, like, what? And, like, my Twitter's going crazy. I have 20-plus notifications every single time I pick up my phone. And most of it is, unfortunately, negative backlash. My friend Morgan, who's the D.C. director, is also facing the same kind of negative backlash. And it's just really, really difficult to see us, just, you know, young Americans trying to defend what our nation is founded on, to receive so much hatred from ignorant and closed-minded people who just hate to see us succeed and hate to see us be confident in what we stand in.
Talking to you with Zeema Amirani of March for Our Rights. So Zeema, what happens next? I know that this was the beginning of your movement, and do you continue to plan on continuing to work on this?
Oh, yes. We have a lot of things coming up next, actually. I was just working on planning some things or developing some of our plans when you guys called me in for this interview. So right now, the March for Our Lives bus tour is touring the country, and we are working on developing locations where we will show up. Our March for Our Rights foot tour, I guess, because we don't have the resources to have a giant bus drive us around the country. They are coming to L.A., which is our most staffed, most volunteered location as far as March for Our Rights goes. So we are actually in the works of developing a little just, I wouldn't call it a counter-protest because we're not going to be protesting. We're just going to show up there. We're going to, like, have a table, label it, like, we are pro-Second Amendment students, change your mind or something.
Right.
Have people come up to us, talk to us, tell them about why we defend the Second Amendment, maybe try to get them help, help them sign up for the NRA, stuff like that, just to, like, offer a different perspective than what's being presented by the people who are doing that bus tour. So that's something we're working on. March for Our Lives is also planning a big march on the NRA headquarters. So I guess you guys should watch out for that because they're doing that next month. And we are working on developing some kind of counter protest to stand up for you guys and show that there are students who support the NRA.
Well, listen, Zeema, I appreciate you coming on the program, and we're going to continue following what you're doing. You know, I think it's awesome that you and Morgan and the other volunteers are doing this really just out of passion, and you're standing up for your rights and encouraging other folks to do the same at a time, again, in which it's difficult. You know, if you put your head up, you know, they're going to come after you. But again, I applaud you for everything that you're doing, and thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Zeema Amirani joins us for March for Our Rights. You can find them online, by the way, at M, and then the number 4OR.org. Also on Twitter at M4OR Official. All right, still to come, we are going to talk with Chuck Michelle, president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, about what's going on there with CalDOJ and the registration requirements for your quote-unquote assault weapons. As Californians tried to register their firearms with the CalDOJ, they ran into a lot of trouble. And that may not have even been the worst of it, because now talk of a data breach. Yeah, reports of these systems and improper disclosure of personal information to other users. Yeah, this was from the California Rifle and Pistol Association alert that was sent out over the weekend. There have been confirmed reports of individuals attempting to register their firearms who were improperly given access to the account information associated with another individual due to a complete breakdown of CalDOJ's registration application system. In some cases, the system allowed users to see all of the personal information including home address, telephone number, email, and driver's license number for another user, and all of the information that user had submitted for registering their firearms as quote-unquote assault weapons, including the firearm's make, model, and serial number, as well as all of the photos and attachments to the user's registration application. You know, this is, we're going to talk a lot about this with Chuck Michelle here in the next few minutes, but this is something that, again, gun control advocates, they never really want to talk about. They don't really like to talk about registration and licensing because, again, that's a turnoff for a lot of people. But even when they acknowledge, yeah, I would love to see the everybody's gun registered because we can't have universal background checks without it, they don't really want to talk about how the government has protected or not protected your data to this point. How many breaches of federal databases have we had over the past couple of years where your information was made available to hackers? Quite a few, right? Then you got issues like this, where you're required by the state to register your firearms with the state, and yet that database, that information, is not secure, may just be accessible by the next gun owner who logs on, or the next individual who logs onto that website and starts messing around. I mean, that's, again, you'd think heads would roll at Cal DOJ. You'd think there might be some, I don't know, some big stories about it. But I haven't been able to find a single news story out of California about this. I've seen the alert from the California Rifle and Pistol Association, but I haven't seen anything like that, which is amazing because you remember, Cameron, that story out of Florida a few weeks ago? Now, the concealed carry permits and the original reporting made it sound like for, like, you know, months and months, nobody got a background check. And was this huge story. Well, as it turns out, it really wasn't that. It was like one employee who was under investigation. And it turns out there were like a dozen or so concealed carry licenses that one employee issued that shouldn't have been issued. So they had to revoke them. Yeah. And then there was a follow up where it was, again, the story was like, this has been going on for years. And again, as it turns out, the inspector general investigating this, an internal investigation uncovers all of this, and it's actually dealt with. But the story itself is written to make it sound like, oh, who's in charge here? What's going on? When it actually is, oh, look, there is oversight, and people are getting fired for not doing their job. And there is oversight. Okay, and there are redundancies in place. But that was a big story. That was actually a national story, because the head of that agency is a Republican running for governor in Florida. And so it was a big story because it had to be. And they tried to use it to ding that candidate. Cal DOJ, run by a former representative, Xavier Becerra, I don't think he's running for governor in California. That's Gavin Newsom. And, you know, he's an anti-gun guy. So do we really need to make this a big story? A data breach in terms of the gun registration? Nah, we can probably let that one go, right? Just did a news search for California data breach, and lo and behold, NRA ILA, the only one reporting it. Here is something from the Irish Times a few days ago. California setting new data privacy standards for the United States. New York Times, June 28th, California passes sweeping law to protect online privacy. Did they exempt themselves from that new law, one wonders? California's passed a digital privacy law, granting consumers more control and insight into the spread of their personal information online, while at the same time allowing complete strangers to access all of your personal information, including the guns that you own, that you've had to register with the state of California. That's amazing. Anyway, we'll talk about this with Chuck Michelle, head of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, coming up here in just a little bit. Also, next hour, we have our hero of the day, we have our deal of the day, we have our good guy of the day, and we've got a case that it's not your typical deal, but I want to get into that as well. Before we take a quick timeout, more news out of Seattle, Washington, where, you know, what was it, 2 years ago, they passed a gun and ammo tax, right? Every purchase of ammunition, every new firearm purchased in Seattle was going to get a higher tax. And the result was that a lot of gun stores shut down and moved out of the city of Seattle. And the city is now dependent on one retailer for about 80% of that tax revenue. The tax revenue that was brought in by this new tax was about half what the city thought it was going to be. Well, the city is back at it with another tax on another product. This time it's a tax on soda. And this time it seems to be working much better for the city of Seattle. Yes, they've taken in nearly $1 million more than they had predicted with their brand new soda tax. In the first 3 months, according to KOMO, the tax raised $4.4 million. City's budget office estimated the tax would raise $14.8 million in its first year. Now, in addition to raising more money, people apparently are drinking less soda. Todd Beesold, CFO of Merlino Foods, who sells beverage products wholesale to area restaurants, says sales are down probably 15 to 20%. He told KOMO he grabbed a 32-ounce bottle of grenadine. He said, everybody's favorite bar mixer. He said, we sell this for $5 a bottle. Do you know what the tax is on a 32-ounce bottle of grenadine, Cameron?
Wait, hold on a second. Am I missing something? Why are they taxing grenadine?
Because it's a sweetened beverage. They're taxing the syrup.
Right.
Right?
You don't drink it. You don't put it in a bottle in a glass and just drink grenadine. That is really strange. I can't believe that's part of it. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the $5 bottle of grenadine, the tax on it is $6.72. The tax is more than the actual product, which is amazing. Beesold said a 5-gallon box of Coca-Cola syrup sells for $89. The tax is $65. So you are nearly doubling the cost of a soda. KOMO says the law dictates how the money will be spent in the first year, 26% going to healthy food options for low-income people, 24% to family child care programs, 17% for the first year of college tuition for Seattle high school graduates, and 14% to collect the tax as well as an evaluation study. Mm-hmm. There are some restaurant owners who are figuring out ways to get around this. By the way, Deborah Wise owns the Pecos Pit barbecue stand. And a lot of her customers are drinking water now. A lot of them are drinking homemade lemonade. Wise said my bill for her syrup, over $1,000. She said, I can't absorb it. So I said, okay, I have to pass it on. So she put out a little sign alerting customers that she has two prices for her fountain drinks. One price includes the tax that she has to pay the city, which is nearly 2 cents per ounce. And the other is a tax-free soda. She says, we're making a lot more lemonade because homemade lemonade is not taxable. See? Which, of course, is going to be the lemonade loophole, which will be shut down next, right? All in the name of fighting obesity. Meanwhile, I saw over the weekend, Cameron, Philly cream cheese had a tweet promoting putting a big glob of cream cheese in your tea.
Oh, God.
Mm.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, right?
What's wrong with
that? That's kind of what I thought, too.
God.
So, yeah, you know, we're banning straws and we're taxing soda, all in the name of obesity. And then, meanwhile, why don't you just dump some? You know what you should really do? Here's what I do. Skip the cream cheese. Just get a jar of that cookie butter and then just put like two big spoonfuls of cookie butter there in your tea.
Can I just one quick thing about the straws real quick? I know we have to break. So I'm when it comes to anything liberal about me, it has to do with animals and wildlife and fish and everything. And I see these videos of plastic. And listen, we could all be better stewards of the earth. I don't have to be a big environmentalist to say that. You know, maybe use less plastic, maybe use less whatever. But they're going crazy with these plastic straws. So as you said, Starbucks is going to get rid of the straws. But if you look at the pictures of they look like sippy cups. That the lids, so instead of a straw, you'll get a lid that looks like a sippy cup. Now, in my mind, maybe I had this wrong. it takes more plastic to make the sippy cup lid, and a straw isn't that much plastic when you think about it. So aren't we really just making the same amount of plastic, but just doing it in a different shape?
I think the key, Cameron, you just mentioned it, sippy cups. I think this is really maybe a plot just to, you know, again, the continued infantilization of the American people that straws are for big boys and girls. No, you get a sippy cup. Hey, but we're going to lower the voting age to 8, so that's great. All right, stick around. When we come back, Chuck Michelle, president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, joins us. Top of the hour, hero of the day, deal of the day, good guy, and more. We've got much more Cam and Company still to come.
I'm speaking with Mark Bayless with the Valor Clinic. The Valor Clinic Foundation is the official name. And Mark, thank you for being here. Tell us, what is Valor Clinic? What do you do?
Thank you for having me, sir. We help struggling vets, usually with the War to Peace readjustment. Very often that includes the emotional scars of war, or PTS, as it's generally referred. And we've built a program for when PTS results in homelessness. We have a facility in Northeast Pennsylvania where we restored an old historic hotel and made it into a bed and breakfast for homeless veterans. And we run a program that has a very, very good success rates for follow-on placement. And we've built a program to rebuild the life skills and focus in their life that the veterans need to help them manage the emotional scars of war and their day-to-day lives that has proven remarkably effective. We have about 330 veterans through that program now, and they're all still alive, and we are very proud of that fact. And we are currently working to get some unity effort among other groups doing similar work. And we think there needs to be a rally cry like pink is for breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And the color we are trying to make the rally cry, we're in the process of making. Let me keep it on a positive tone. We're in the process of making the rally cry to bring the other veterans groups together. And all agencies that are helping with this problem would be in the color match system, a color called Pantone 395. But we call the color Vet 22. And I'm wearing this tie and symbolism for that color today.
That's the color.
That's the color.
Very
nice.
We
tried to tie it to when you had to figure out, okay, what color do you use? America's very familiar with tie a yellow ribbon, right? For, welcome home, the veterans.
Of course.
But we wanted some. We need some alarm to raise here too. The suicide rate at generally acknowledged as 22 a day. The number by study varies some. I've seen them as high as 28 estimates and as low as 20. But if you talk to veterans' families who have been fallen as casualties in the war at home, they argue that a lot of things aren't tracked. A lot of the veterans, when they take their own life, are doing it by intentional overdose. And then the statistic goes up. It was an overdose. It wasn't a suicide.
Right.
Or one vehicle accidents. And those go down as a motorcycle crash or a car crash.
Right. So.
And they don't go down as a suicide. So there are some that suggest the number is much higher. But even if you use 22 a day, we've lost about 6,000 troops to armed conflict since 9/11. And in a similar time, do the math. 365 times 22 times. It's an alarming number. I believe it's in excess of 130,000 now as we roll.
My.
And it is a tragic epidemic, and it needs to be corrected. And I believe if all the people working on this problem don't come together somehow to show some unity effort, this problem will not be fixed. And so we call for other organizations or even businesses when they're doing their Veterans Day promotions and celebrations to acknowledge veterans. Maybe they do a hat tip to the war at home and maybe include some Pantone 395 in their color and in awareness for the veteran suicide problem. And we believe the veteran homeless problem largely comes from the PTS problem as well. But I will spare your audience too much detail on that.
It's worthy of another interview. Speaking with Mark Bayless of the Valor Clinic Foundation. All right, Mark, before we run out of time, how do we get more information about the Valor Clinic Foundation?
You can follow us on Facebook, keyword Valor Clinic, or you can go to our website at www.valorclinic.org. And we appreciate your time, taking time to listen and hear our message. And thank you very much for your support.
Thank you for what you do, sir, and keep up the good work. Stay in touch. We love what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us here today on Cam and Company. An hour from now, You'll hear from Morgan Sachs, the D.C. organizer of March for Our Rights. Right now, I want to welcome the president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Mr. Chuck Michelle is with us on the program. Chuck, how are you, sir?
Tim, I'm hanging in there. It's hot out here and the politics. Thank God the legislators are off for a month, so we've got a little bit of a break.
Yeah, but you know, look, even when the heat doesn't get you, the mudslides will get you there in California. If the legislature doesn't get you, it's going to be the bureaucracy that's going to get you, Chuck. And right now we're talking about the bureaucracy, Cal DOJ and what they're doing here with their registration system, for, these, guns that they've deemed to be quote unquote assault weapons, the third, redefinition in about, two decades here. So gun owners who did not turn their firearms into featureless rifles. Those who decided, all right, I'm going to keep my gun the way it is, but I have to now register my gun with the state of California. What's happened, Chuck, when they've tried to actually comply with state law?
Well, the DOJ blew it again. I mean, there's no other way to say this. We now have a regular column in the CRPA's magazine called the DOJ Snafu, Situation Normal, All Fouled Up. I mean, they cannot get it right. They've blown the regulations that they had to pass to enact every law that they've been responsible for, and the most recent being the latest incarnation of the assault weapon registration process. So they were late in defining what guns were going to be considered to be assault weapons by regulation. They were late in setting up the registration platform, online registration platform, that would allow people to register their guns as so-called assault weapons. They asked for far too much information, way more information than the law required in order for somebody to be able to register their guns, including time and place of acquisition, which many people don't have that. They don't remember when or where they bought their firearm. And so a lot of people were unable to register because of that. Yet all the military folks who were overseas didn't have their guns with them, and so were not able to take pictures of the gun because DOJ required pictures. Meantime, anybody who did try or maybe successfully registered a gun that the DOJ didn't think was an assault weapon got a visit from the police. And then just to cap things off, the last weekend, the last few days that you had to register, the DOJ system, online registration system, crashed, so that it was impossible to complete your registration because there was no registration system. There was no form to fill out. There was nothing to submit because their platform, their online platform, ceased to function. So it's unfortunately all too typical for DOJ, Cal DOJ Firearms Bureau.
So you wanted to register, you couldn't because the website crashed. And then what is this I saw about the, in the alert that you all sent out about a data breach? Like when folks were going to the website, they were actually seeing information that other gun owners had already entered, Chuck?
Yes. When they went to register their firearm, other firearm owners, and we don't know what exactly connected one registration to several others, they were able to see the name, address, social security number, driver's license, all the personal information about the person and all the private information about the firearm that was being registered for several other people besides them, but you know, besides their own. So yeah, it's, and that's happened before. DOJ has inadvertently released information about firearm instructors that have certain licenses from the DOJ before. They've given that to the media, and that was a mess they had to clean up. And now they've got another mess on their hands. And so who knows how many tens or hundreds of thousands of people that wanted to register their firearms couldn't. So now we've put out something, NRA and CRPA have put out a bulletin on what your options are to, if you have one of these firearms that you should have wanted to register but couldn't.
Okay. And by the way, no media coverage of this whatsoever, Chuck. I just looked. And NRA, ILA, and NRA TV are the only people talking about this. LA Times, nothing. San Francisco Chronicle, nothing. I mean, look, they were happy to report on the passage of these gun control laws. They were happy to report that California is getting tough on gun owners again. But when the system fails, that's just not a news story, I guess.
No, when DOJ, no. I mean, when accidental criminals are created by ill-conceived and poorly administered gun control laws? No, that takes away from the narrative. We're trying to push it to the earned media. We're trying to push it to all the outlets. we'll see if any of them bite, but I'm not particularly hopeful.
I hope that they do. It's a real news story. It'd be great if a reporter or two would actually get a chance to ask some questions of Xavier Becerra there at Cal DOJ. And in the meantime, I mean, what are you telling those who tried to register their firearms but could not do so and are now technically in violation of California law? Has Cal DOJ said anything at all about this?
No, nothing, and I doubt they ever will. I mean, our NRA's lobbyist is trying to get to Becerra personally to get him to pay attention to this, but this is, again, situation normal for Cal DOJ Firearms Bureau. What folks need to do is immediately disassemble the gun and don't ever say anything to anyone about your intention or ability to put it back together. And then once you do that, it's no longer considered an assault weapon while it's disassembled. But if you talk about putting it back together, you can be in constructive possession of an assault weapon. Then you've got to figure out if you're going to get one of the aftermarket parts that will make it featureless, and that's probably the best thing to do, or take it out of the state or do some of the other things you could do. But rendering it featureless by getting an aftermarket part that makes the magazine non-detachable is probably the best option. But that's laid out in the information bulletin that should be at Stand and Fight California through the NRA's website.
Again, talking about the California Rifle and Pistol Association President Chuck Michelle. I'm curious, Chuck, I mean, given that now California has redefined a quote-unquote assault weapon to basically have, as you say, any feature. Now you've got to have these featureless rifles that are California compliant. Seems like the next step, and we know that they do things one step at a time out there, the next step would be to ban the quote-unquote featureless rifles. How far away do you think we are from that bill being introduced in the legislature?
Two or three years. Some of these aftermarket retrofits are actually easier to work with than the bullet button was, which was the major thing that rendered magazines non-detachable before. So it's only a matter of time before they start cranking up the spin machine and talking about how these are deadly and public safety menaces. Not that any terrorist or violent criminal is ever going to bother making their gun conform with California law. They'll simply use the version that's been illegal for a long time. And they won't be bothered with a bullet button or an aftermarket kit or whatever it is. They're just going to, make the gun in whatever format, configuration they want to commit their crimes. So this is just a harassment of law-abiding gun owners. It's harassment of folks who own guns for sport or defend their to defend themselves or their families. It does nothing to combat terrorism or violent crime.
Chuck Michelle, listen, I appreciate you coming on the program, sir. Thanks for everything you're doing out there in California, and best of luck to you, sir.
Thanks, Cam. We fight on. Help us. Thanks for helping us get the word out.
Absolutely. Stand and Fight California, as Chuck said, and then crpa.org. You can also follow Chuck at CRPA President. We've known Chuck and talked with Chuck for years and years now. He has been one of the chief civil rights attorneys out there fighting for the Second Amendment of California. Now the president of the California Rifle and Pistol Association as well. Coming up top of the hour, we have today's hero of the day. We have our deal of the day. Good guy for you as well. Also, Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom. And in the couple minutes we have left, this was going to be my deal of the day. And then I actually started reading this. And, it is worth noting sometimes that when a prosecutor takes a plea deal, sometimes there are good reasons for this. So Comal County, Texas, a man who was initially arrested and put behind bars on dozens of charges, including 19 counts of child pornography and sexual assault, has reached a plea deal with Comal County DA Jennifer Tharp. Jason Deed Hunter pleaded guilty to stalking and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon on June 28th. Biggest charge against him was attempted capital murder, but that was thrown out before the trial even started. Now, Hunter has a lengthy criminal record. He's been accused of physical and verbal abuse dating back years. Jessica Collins dated Hunter from 2002 to 2007, actually gave birth to their daughter during that time. She said the abuse, the beatings, and the threats that were ongoing made her fear for her life. She said, "I'm terrified of him that he'll kill me, that he's going to come kill me and take my daughter." She was forced to move to escape the abuse. Amanda Wibrock, another ex of Hunter, said she too was abused by him. Most recent legal trouble for Hunter stems from a relationship he had with a woman in 2015. He allegedly threatened to kill her unborn baby, but that charge was quashed in a decision that the state is now appealing. So Hunter took this plea deal that gives him a 15-year sentence. The sentence only requires him to serve half that time before he's eligible for parole. Amanda Wibrocht, who is, again, one of his former victims, said, quote, "This is really messed up." And if you think about it, I mean, like, again, on the surface, here's a guy who's really charged with attempted capital murder, ends up taking a plea bargain, sentenced to 15 years, but he's only going to have to do 7.5 before he's eligible for parole. Well, Jennifer Tharp actually put out a press release on this and talked about what happened. There were, she writes, after over 9 hours of deliberation and while on break, because this case did go to trial, and the jury had actually gotten this case. After over 9 hours of deliberation and while on break, one of Hunter's prior victims, who was a possible witness but not under subpoena, approached a juror and spoke to the juror about the case. Yeah, which was reported to the court immediately. The court inquired as to whether the outside influence impacted the juror's deliberations, and the juror informed the court that it did. That individual who spoke to the juror was then arrested and remained in custody over the weekend on a $500,000 bond for the misdemeanor offense of improper influence. The DA said, based on the length of the jury's deliberations and the notes sent out by the jury, it appeared unlikely that the defendant was going to be found guilty of the offense of sexual assault. And basically, the charges he was going to be convicted of would only have given him 10 years in prison. So she took the deal in order to get the most time behind bars while they appeal that decision that threw out the attempted capital murder charge. So on the face of it, might be a deal of the day, but you start to investigate a little bit further, makes a little more sense. Stick around. Hour 3 of Cam and Company is next.
Everyone understands the importance of securing our public places. That's why every major corporate campus and office tower, every sporting event, celebrity award show, and government building, all of it is protected by multiple layers of security. But when it comes to our most precious resource, not gold or oil or precious jewels, our children, we utterly fail to protect them at school every single day. Each day that goes by, our banks and businesses are better protected than our children. That's a national outrage. NRA's School Shield program has already made world-class security resources available to hundreds of American schools. It's free of politics, and it's free of charge. If your child's school isn't protected, ask them to call School Shield today. We're the National Rifle Association of America, guardians of our school children and freedom's safest place.
Let me ask you a simple question. Do you believe you have a right to defend yourself and your family with a firearm in your own home? 4 Supreme Court justices say you do, but 4 say you don't, because the deciding vote announced he's retiring. And your most fundamental right to self-defense could be extinguished. This is our opportunity to protect the one freedom that guarantees all the others, the freedom that makes America different from every other country on earth. The Second Amendment is at stake. America is at stake. We are the last place on earth that still believes in the fundamental God-given right of self-defense. And we don't care if we're the last ones in the arena. We will never, ever stop fighting for this freedom. We're the National Rifle Association of America, and we're freedom's safest place.
I'm a law-abiding citizen who's never shot anybody, never committed a serious crime, never committed a felony. But it seems like every time we have one of these shootings, nobody wants to put the blame where it goes, which is at the shooter's feet. You want to put it at my feet.
I felt like I needed to say something for all the people out there that I just spoke about, the people who have come together, who are together, who feel unified. That majority of people who obey the law, you know, and work hard every day, and are just tired of people trying to pull them apart and pull them in all different directions. I think there's millions of me across the country, and I'm hoping that each one of those people will go out and tell these politicians we're not going to take it, and we're going to stand up for our rights, and we're going to hold on to them. Anyone who is concerned with holding on to the Second Amendment, I absolutely think they should join the NRA.
My daughter came into the bedroom and she said, "Dad, there's a man in black tactical gear shooting up the Baptist church." Every one of those shots to me represented one of my neighbors, one of my friends. And I ran as fast as I could. Immediately, he came out of the church shooting at me. He hit the truck in front of me, hit the car behind me, hit the house behind me. And I hit him. He had an AR-15, but so did I. And it's not the gun, it's the heart. It's a matter of the heart. I'm not the bravest man in the world or anything, but I was here. I was here, and I could do something. And I had to do something.
TV with Cam Edwards.
Welcome back. Hour three of Cam and Comedy already here. Where is the time going today? Welcome. Glad you've joined us here on NRA TV. Cam Edwards, your host, at Cam Edwards on Twitter. Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom joining us this hour. Also, we'll take you back to the March for Our Rights. Morgan Sachs, the D.C. organizer, had a chance to spend a couple minutes with Morgan before the event kicked off on Saturday. At NRA TV, just retweeting out a portion of my speech there from the D.C. event, and thank you for that. Let's get to our hero of the day, our deal of the day, and our good guy of the day. Hero of the day from WHIO, Channel 7 in Dayton, Ohio, where police report a man held three attempted burglars at gunpoint outside of Belmont Party Supply. This was early Sunday morning. Until police arrived, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. The man, who identified himself only as Kevin, witnessed another attempted burglary last April there at that same location. He said, "I didn't know what to do or how much time I had, so I recorded them on my phone, and I gave it to police back then. This time," he said, "I thought it was the same people as last time. One guy was standing in the window. A girl was in the car waiting to go, and a guy was moving around in the store." So Kevin grabbed his pistol, ran across the street, told the suspects to get down to the ground. The female and the man standing outside of the window complied. They sat down. The person inside, wearing a black hoodie, came outside of the building that was being burgled and got in the passenger side of the vehicle and then kind of slid over to the driver's side of the vehicle. Kevin yelled, "Get out of the car, get out of the car." Eventually, the guy got out of the car, and he sat down next to his friends. WHIO says Kevin had his pistol pointed at the three suspects until police arrived. When police arrived, they demanded that Kevin put the gun down. When he did, one of the suspects then fled the scene. K-9 unit was brought in to try to track the dude down, but unsuccessful at doing so. Kevin said it was intense. "I just knew," he said, "that I wanted to stop them." Other male suspect arrested, taken to the Juvenile Justice Center, according to Sergeant Kyle Thomas of the Dayton Police Department. The female suspect in the vehicle, 18-year-old Epiphany Caitlin Bailey, was arrested and is facing breaking and entering charges now. That third suspect, it's unclear whether or not he has been taken into custody. Richard Wright, who works at Belmont Party Supply, says this is the third attempted break-in this year. He says he is feeling grateful for Kevin, the good Samaritan there in Dayton. He says, quote, "We need good people like that to step up." And so Kevin stepping up, helping out, and helping to make sure that several burglars did not get away with it there in Dayton, Ohio. He is today's hero of the day. On to our deal of the day. From WTVR in Richmond, Virginia, where a Richmond man is now behind bars after a cell phone video showed him brutally beating a woman holding her child. 19-year-old Delman Coleman is behind bars now. Lengthy criminal history for Mr. Coleman. We'll talk about that in just a second. The video, which was turned over to police, shows Coleman punching the woman who's got a toddler in her hand during a fight there in Richmond, Virginia, in the parking lot of the Chippenham Place Apartments. This was last Thursday around 8 p.m. in the evening. Sources told KTVR, or WTVR rather, that this victim was smacked in the face with a speaker box so hard that one of her teeth was knocked out. Police arrested Coleman, charged him with simple as well as domestic assault. Could be open to a malicious wounding charge given that a tooth was knocked out. WTBR said Coleman was at the apartments to help somebody move in, apparently. And he has a, quote, long criminal history. In fact, there are more than 20 different mugshots on file for Mr. Delman Coleman, who's 19 years of age. Ponder that for a second. There are more mugshots of this 19-year-old than there are school pictures. Because you only get your picture taken once a year at school. Right? 19 years old, at least 20 mugshots. WTVR wonders, with such an extensive criminal history, how was Coleman out of jail when the alleged attack happened? Yeah. Local criminal defense attorney talking with WTVR said it's a reasonable question to ask, looking at his history. He's had a bunch of charges over the last few years, but we don't know what he was convicted of. The judge determines bond off of a flight risk or danger to the community, and if some of the charges aren't convictions, then they don't see that. Well, right now, Mr. Coleman's being held without bond at the Richmond Justice Center, scheduled to appear in court soon on a cocaine distribution charge, which is the charge that he had most recently posted bond for. So he was out on bond while he was accused of assaulting this woman with the toddler. There you go. 19-year-old Delman Coleman in Richmond, Virginia. Today's deal of the day. On our good guy of the day, from KFOR out of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Story itself out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. KTUL, I guess, originally reporting this story. Story about a guy who was actually facing jail time for his overdue DVD of Ted, the movie about the talking stuffed animal bear, the one with Mark Wahlberg. We had Ted on our set, remember, Cameron, at SHOT Show. We had the actual Ted there with us.
Thor's hammer. Some cool movie items, absolutely.
It was. I didn't realize that you could go to jail for this. But Lonnie Perry rented the DVD Ted back in 2014. He said, I lived in Claremore at the time. Which is north of Tulsa. He said, it was just a regular weekday. I went home from work. I stopped by. I rented a movie. I went home and I watched it. Paid, you know, $5 or $6 to rent it. Before he could return it, and he might have forgotten to return it. It might have been one of those things where you found it like a week later. Lonnie Perry became homeless. Threw all of his stuff in a box, including his rented DVD, and moved. And he forgot about it. And till he got a phone call from the Rogers County District Attorney's Office, and he got a letter in the mail warning him that it was now going to cost $218.07 to clear this matter up. Lonnie Perry said, I just don't have the money right off. He said, I'll get it and I'll pay it. He said, I'll do what I have to do. I just think it could have gone a different route. Could have been, could have, I guess. KTUL spoke with the store. They said they tried to get in touch with Perry several times, but since they couldn't track him down, they eventually passed it off to the DA since it is more or less stolen property. And Lonnie Perry says, look, I understand the video place having to do what they've got to do. He said there are just other means of trying to get a hold of people without a warrant. Well, after this story was aired on KTUL in Tulsa, Oklahoma, it turns out local business owner there saw this story. The owner of the handyman company, Jeff of All Trades, saw this and thought, I can help this guy out. So he actually went down to the movie rental store, which frankly, Karen, can we just take a second to acknowledge that there's still a video rental store open in Tulsa, Oklahoma? I mean, like,
I thought outside of Alaska, there were none left. It's great to hear.
Right? I mean, he rented this in 2014. What are the odds that, you know, this store was still going to be around?
He probably thought the same thing. Don't worry about
exactly. Like, well, I'd pay for it, but God, it had to close down by now, right? But nope, they're still around. And Jeff of All Trades saw this story and said, you know what, I'll go down there. And he actually paid everything that Lonnie Perry owed on that Ted DVD. So now Lonnie doesn't have to worry about a warrant out for the movie Ted. He can hopefully get on and help rebuild his life. So the owner of Jeff of All Trades, just seeing this story, been in a position where he could help out somebody who needed a little bit of help. Nothing huge, nothing earth-shattering, Except if you're, you know, Lonnie Perry and you were looking at possible jail time for a Ted DVD, that's pretty earth-shattering. So a tip of the cap, thank you for being in the right place and at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, to Jeff of all trades there in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And our good guy is always brought to you by our friends at Odor Crusher. I imagine that Jeff and his guys probably get a little sweaty and stinky out there and, you know, working in the hot Oklahoma sun. Just an acknowledgement that Odor Crusher just up the road there in Wichita would make those clothes smell oh so sweet. Jeff, after a long day working there with Jeff of all trades. All right, still to come on the program this afternoon, Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom, Morgan Sachs joining us as well from March for Our Rights, the D.C. head of March for Our Rights. You also had the rally take place in Chicago, Illinois. So Rhonda Ezell was out there with the Chicago Guns Matter. And we are still looking at tonight's big news. Coming up 9 p.m. Eastern, we're going to get the news from President Trump. Who is his pick going to be for the Supreme Court seat left vacant with the retirement of Justice Anthony Kennedy? We don't really know, but the scuttlebutt has moved into overdrive here. I can't even I've just been glancing at Twitter, Cameron, but the tweets seem to be getting more and more breathless, and I'm still seeing all four names mentioned, but now it's so-and-so's a front runner, so-and-so's dropped out, so-and-so's a front runner. I mean, like, you could literally find, if you just started looking, everybody's still the front runner, and everybody has also now fallen behind the pack.
And I'm surprised because we have all the networks on here in the control room, and I've been watching, looking at the CNN monitor, and, you know, CNN loves a good countdown, and there's just a graphic saying 9 p.m. I'm surprised there's no Trump countdown. Of all the things in the world to have a countdown for, shouldn't it be that Trump picking a SCOTUS nominee?
You would think. You would think, but there's got to be some sort of, like, psychological reason behind it, you know, that if it's just a countdown to destruction or something, like, you know, they're really
like
afraid
doomsday
of
clock?
What happens when the... Exactly. When it hits zero... There's just a psychological effect because, I mean, I've been saying it for the past couple of days, and I'm serious about it, and it's really not funny. There are people who are broken right now over our politics. There are people who are broken that Donald Trump is president. Did you see the piece over the weekend? I saw Donald Trump Jr. I think he might have been the one that originally tweeted this out. And it was – I forget what the comment was. They said it couldn't be done. Oh, it's doing or something like that. And it was flashing back to the summer of 2016 and all of the candidates, Hillary Clinton, even the, you know, politicians like Elizabeth Warren, all of the media figures, Donald Trump will not be the president. Donald Trump will not be president. Donald Trump will not be president. It was about 45 seconds of that. And then flash forward to, you know, a week or so before the election and all the prognosticators, Hillary Clinton, 96% chance of winning the presidency. This polling has never been wrong, and you're saying it predicts that Hillary Clinton's going to win. Absolutely, it's a lock. And then it cuts to election night. And they had Sink Yuger of the Young Turks. And every time they would declare a state, they would cut back to Sink, who's just flipping out. And, you know, first it's starting with damn. And then it goes into the words I can't really say. By the end of the evening, as it gets to 270, it's basically just Sink Yuger. I mean, surprised he didn't just, like, rip off his shirt and just bleep, because it was pretty close to that. Anyway, it really was. You forget what a lock it was supposed to be. You forget the mindset that they had going into the election. The history had already been written, right? 2018 was the year that America elected the first female president, and the glass ceiling got broken, and we could continue the work that Barack Obama had done in his scandal-free administration, and we could build this bridge to the 21st century. It was going to be amazing for them. Right? And it didn't really work out that way. And so, Justice Gorsuch shouldn't be Justice Gorsuch. He should be Justice Garland. And we shouldn't be talking about President Trump picking a Supreme Court nominee. We should talk about President Clinton picking a Supreme Court nominee. We should be talking about that sixth judge to repeal Heller. We should be talking about that sixth judge to say you don't really have a right to keep and bear arms. The court got it wrong a decade ago. And if towns want to ban guns, they can ban guns. And if states want to ban guns, they can ban guns. And if the federal government wants to pass a ban on the carrying of firearms, they can pass a ban on the carrying of firearms. Because you've got a right to join a militia and carry a gun there. In their world, that's what was supposed to be happening right now. They were supposed to be celebrating. They were supposed to be high-fiving each other. Aha! We undid the damage that was done back in 2008. They're not high-fiving each other today. They're kind of wringing their hands, right? A little worried about a justice being appointed to the Supreme Court that can actually read the text of the Constitution, can read the text of the Bill of Rights, can understand what individual rights are all about and how worthy of protection they are. So, just watching that little video reminded me of why there are some Americans out there who have been broken by the last 2 years. They were so, so deeply invested in the idea that this was a fait accompli and that President Clinton was going to be in charge for the next 8 years. And as time goes on, and the legacy of the Trump administration starts to take shape in terms of the appointment of Justice Gorsuch and whoever President Trump nominates tonight, some of them are literally losing their mind. And it's, again, there's Schadenfreude, but it's never really pleasant to see your fellow Americans just absolutely check out on reality because they can't face the truth. All right, stick around. When we come back, Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom joins us. We've got much more Cam and Company coming up right after this.
So I'm talking with Dan Drake, the president and CEO of Odor Crusher. Dan, it's good to talk with you, sir.
No, thanks for coming out. Gosh.
I appreciate you becoming our on-location sponsor, the sponsor of our Good Guys segment on Cam and Company every day, so I want to thank you for that. Your name is known out there. This is a great product, and I think, I'm really pleased that so many folks have such a positive response. But for folks who maybe haven't heard of Odor Crusher,
right,
let's talk about what it is that this company is all about.
Absolutely. So we started out really on the hunting side of the business with Scent Crusher. So hunters started using the products, and we were named the best new product in the hunting industry for a couple years in a row. And really it was my friends I had in law enforcement that went, gosh, can we use this on the law enforcement side? Will you teach us or will you make something for us that's specific to us? So what our technology does is we use ozone, and you put it in one of our bags or closets or in the car, and we blow ozone into it, and it kills all the smell and, more importantly, the bacteria that sits there. So in the hunting world, you can now be 20 yards from a deer because they can't smell you. In the sports world, it kills all the smells in hockey, football, soccer. But in the military, tactical, and police side, it now will take care of all that body armor, your helmets, your shoes, your gloves that you can't clean anymore.
That's amazing. All right, so can we kind of like look and see some of the products here?
Yep. So this is kind of the hunting side of the business, and again, closets and bags that you can put all your stuff in, and then we'll go down. And we'll look at the tactical side of the business.
Sure. Absolutely. Come with me. So what are we looking at here, Dan?
So this is really kind of our full line of stuff that we created for police officers, military, and tactical side. So these are range bags or duty bags that officers have, fully mollied up, set up here so they can put pins and business cards and, you know, whatever they need or are going to use on a daily basis, and the same on the inside, all mollied up, separated to be able to be used, clipboards, a set, to set up their cell phones, whatever they're doing for the day that sits right next to them. So, again, they can now take their tactical gear, their bulletproof vest at the end of the day, throw it in here, plug it in their cigarette lighter, plug it into their wall outlet at home, and they're set. It's as simple as, just turn this on here, turning it on, hitting the button, running it for 30 minutes, boom, everything's clean.
That's it?
That's
amazing.
That's it.
So, all right, so I know it's not magic, because I know you said ozone, but this kind of seems like magic. How does this actually work?
So I actually hired two guys from NASA who had done the International Space Station in ozone to design the products originally. So ozone is the O3 molecule, oxygen's the O2. In nature, electricity or lightning blows apart the oxygen molecules and they make ozone. It's that fresh smell that you have after a rainstorm. So we've essentially created a little mini electrical storm in here, made the ozone, harvested it off, and blown it into a bag or a backpack or a closet. In 45 minutes, it becomes oxygen again. So there's nothing harmful about it. It's nature's way of kind of cleaning the bacteria and stuff that sits in the environment.
And you guys, it seems like you have a full lineup here. I mean, we're looking, as you say, like, you know, this would be a great range bag, but you got some big boys over here, right?
So this is kind of our first responding actor shooter backpack. So you can pull it up over you and have front and back protection for you if you need that. A regular backpack here to carry around, or, you know, we've got giant bags here. So you can put your gun or your bow or whatever you might have underneath here and then carry around all your gear inside. And, again, same technology sits right here.
That's amazing. And even the hard case stuff. Now, this, I got to tell you, with our crew, because we pack a lot of stuff every time we go on the road, so we're using these hard cases. And honestly, I mean, I had a lot of our guys say, hey, let's look at this stuff. So this is, I mean, this is amazing. This is an actual chest right here.
Rough, tough, handle, wheels. You guys can toss it around. And then at the end of the day, throw all your gear in here, hit the button. 30 minutes, it's all clean.
This is the coolest stuff, Dan. I got to tell you, I'm really, really impressed. How can folks get one for their own? You know, how can they get one to purchase?
We are working with distributors now on the LE side. We've got 15 or 20 distributors around the country. Or you can go to our website, odorcrusher.com, or on Amazon and find the gear and buy it.
Awesome. Now, where is Odorcrusher located? Where's HQ for you?
Wichita, Kansas.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The Midwest.
I love it. All right, odorcrusher.com. Dan Drake, thank you so much for spending some time
with
us, sir. It's great talking with you today. Welcome back to Cam and Company. Cam Edwards, your host. Still to come, Morgan Sachs, the D.C. organizer for March 4-Hour Rides. Right now, I want to welcome from the Center for Individual Freedom, Mr. Tim Lee is with us on the program. Tim, how are you, sir?
Doing well. I should have worn red and green, probably, because for legal geeks like us, this is sort of like Christmas Day, right?
Yes, it's SCOTUSmas, yes. Yeah, we've got less than 5 hours now before President Trump will tell the nation who he has nominated to be the next Supreme Court nominee, filling the place of Anthony Kennedy, who announced his retirement. And we already know, Tim, that no matter who the president selects, the sad thing is, like, we actually kind of know how this is going to go, right? We know that Chuck Schumer is going to be putting pressure on every Democratic senator, hold the line, stay in the caucus, while trying to encourage any Republicans to peel away. If you can get, you know, one or two Republicans to peel away and all the Democrats stand firm, then President Trump doesn't get his Supreme Court pick through the process here. Although, Democrats representing states that President Trump won, including Senator Tester, Montana, Senator Donnelly in Indiana, Senator Heitkamp in North Dakota, they're going to be getting pressure not only from Chuck Schumer to hold the line, but they're going to be getting pressure from their constituents to, hey, go vote and confirm this justice here. It's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out over the next couple of weeks, because honestly, Tim, you know, when it comes down to it, Democrats really don't have a lot of tools in their toolbox to try to stop this nomination.
They really are in a bind, and the Republican, I'll call them moderates. I tend to dislike that word. The Collins, the Murkowskis of the world, they'll be under a lot of pressure too. And, as John McCain through the years and decades has sort of illustrated, nothing can create that mermaid siren call, like a liberal trying to encourage a Republican to come to their side, and consider themselves mavericks and things of that sort. Of course, when they later come out and do anything remotely conservative, they're quickly dispatched. But again, John McCain is probably the primary example of this. I mean, how many times has he sort of been Charlie Brown to the leftists, Lucy? They sort of kind of smother him with praise when he does something that angers conservatives or libertarians. But then when he does something that's halfway intelligent, I would say, conservative or libertarian, you know, he's quickly cast aside. And the same thing will be true of Senators Collins or Murkowski or any other Republicans that they target. And when I say they, I mean the left. They're going to be smothered in praise. It's going to be hard for them to resist because people like that love to get praise from the left and from the media. And so it's a dangerous thing. Hopefully they can withstand it. But as you said, conversely, there are red state Democrats. Claire McCaskill from Missouri is another one who are really going to have to ask themselves if they want to contravene their constituents' desires as well. So that balances out, I think, pretty closely. I hope. Well, I don't want to jinx it almost by saying whom I hope Trump picks, but I hope they're not cowed by the threat of a fight because there's going to be a fight in any case. And so President Trump needs to pick the person who would best fill what I call Justice Robert Bork's seat. You know, I'm old enough to remember when Robert Bork was nominated for the seat that Anthony Kennedy ultimately filled on the third try by Ronald Reagan after the Ginsburg nomination fell through as well. So this should have been filled by a rock-solid conservative, not Anthony Kennedy. And so I hope that Donald Trump, after 30 years, does the right thing and fills it with the most conservative potential justice in the mold of Robert Bork, not Anthony Kennedy. It wasn't Anthony Kennedy's rightful seat, in my opinion. And those of us who remember that 1987 confirmation battle with Robert Bork and the unfair way he was treated and just the really sleazy tactics to which Joe Biden and Ted Kennedy and people like that descended. We hope that President Trump stands strong. He's proven pretty good so far. His record since being elected in pleasing conservatives has been pretty solid. Hopefully he keeps it up.
I hope so as well. And, you know, we talked about this actually a little bit earlier in the program. We don't know, obviously, who the president's going to pick. I'm kind of annoyed with all of the breathless reporting about, you know, here's the front runner. And then, you know, the next hour, here's another reporter. No, it's this person that's front runner. Nobody knows. Yeah. And at this point, there's no way to confirm any of this reporting. So you can just throw it out there and you know, run with it. But we did take a look at the sort of the four names that are being bandied about the most, Kavanaugh, Kethledge, Hardiman, and Barrett. And, you know, three of the four have actually heard Second Amendment cases on the bench, so they've got at least a little bit of a record, and all of them have had good decisions in terms of recognizing the Second Amendment as an individual right. Justice Barrett's only been on the bench since October of last year, hasn't heard a Second Amendment case, so there's no way to actually, you know, look at the case law and to see your position. But again, one of the really smart things I think that President Trump has done is announcing ahead of time. Look, here are these names, right? 25 names. I'm going to pick my Supreme Court justices from this list of 25. And that gives us all sort of an opportunity to go and look and see who these judges are, who these candidates may be. And frankly, Tim, the arguments that we're seeing right now that I'm seeing on the right, the arguments are not really, well, so-and-so is not a real conservative, or so-and-so is not a real originalist, or so-and-so is not in the Scalia mold. It's sort of this jockeying of position, like you've got your favorite, and, you know, now you're just trying to edge that favorite over the line. But, I mean, honestly, you look at, again, I've looked specifically at Second Amendment issues. I haven't seen any huge red warning flags.
Yeah, as much as I joked about Anthony Kennedy, and I do respect the man, I don't want that to be misconstrued. You know, he wasn't as good, I think, as Robert Bork would have been on many issues. Second Amendment is actually one area where Anthony Kennedy was generally good. He could have been better, but individual liberties. When Anthony Kennedy veered left and angered a lot of conservatives, It was oftentimes in resisting state power in favor of individual rights. And the Second Amendment, as we all know, is an individual right. And so Anthony Kennedy, you know, to his credit, he was in the Heller decision, in the McDonald decision. He chose the right side. So Second Amendment, you know, there's room for improvement. He could have done better. As you know, a lot of the talk was that that Justice Scalia's opinion in the Heller case would have gone farther, but for Anthony Kennedy's reservations. But nevertheless, he actually was good on that. So credit where credit is due. And with any of these judges, I think that that we're probably going to get somebody pretty good. Again, I don't want to jinx myself or ourselves, but I don't see another Justice Souter coming down the pike here. I think we know a little bit more about these people. But Second Amendment is a good proxy for a lot of other issues. If you believe in individual rights versus an oppressive government, you are probably more likely to favor, you know, a sort of a restraint in the administrative state and its growth and some of the other issues. I think the Second Amendment is representative of so many other issues. And so the fact that you have looked at them and generally come to a more positive conclusion, I think is reassuring. No matter which of the four, and we're assuming again that President Trump picks them from among that four, but that's reassuring. Right. I think any of them will be pretty good. We're not going to look at a suitor here. So that's at least good. You know, if Senator Feinstein was able to scare him, and by him I mean President Trump, away from picking Judge Barrett on the basis of her dogma reference, that'll be really unfortunate. Frankly, part of me thinks that that's almost more something to tempt President Trump to nominate Judge Barrett, simply because it would bring on that fight and sort of stick it back to people like Dianne Feinstein in that regard. But we'll see. But, you know, as you discussed a moment ago, looking at their records, that's got to be reassuring to your audience and to people who care about getting a libertarian and conservative justice on the court, that generally speaking, almost all of them will be pretty good, at least as far as we know. And if they turn out not to be great, it's going to be difficult to predict a great or a bad justice because they've shown all the good signs. So that's very encouraging.
Absolutely. Again, Tim Lee with the Center for Individual Freedom, online at cfif.org, on Twitter at cfifonline. Enjoy the evening, Tim. Are you going to be sitting in front of the TV? You're going to have a little chips and dip waiting? You're going to have a little watch party going on?
Yeah, we'll see if we can get together a watch party. Between my red tie, though, and your green shirt, we've got that Christmas coloration coordinated here.
Exactly right. Mr. Tim Lee joins from the Center for Individual Freedom right here on Cam and Company. I have a feeling if I actually watch this at 9 o'clock tonight, which I think I will, I'll probably have to go into the other room because I'm pretty sure that my wife is not going to give up Food Network or HGTV. She just... She'll find it on Facebook, you know, like 15 minutes later. But like a lot of Americans, just doesn't want to be, you know, glued to the TV there. I'm excited. When will you start watching, Cameron? Will you watch right at 9 or will you watch the pregame?
Oh.
Starting at 8.
Oh, as soon as I get home, I'm going to turn on. I need home like about an hour before, you know, half hour to the show. I'm going to watch hours of lead up. This is like, it's like the Super Bowl. You watch the hours of lead up for it. I love this stuff.
I'm surprised that, like, yeah, you know, I guess we need like a red carpet for something like this, right? If you right. have like the Oscars that have the right. on E, everybody would flip over. So this should be like on C-SPAN. People are just like gathering, like filtering into, you know, a watch party somewhere. And yep. you can, what are you wearing tonight? And right, and yeah, ask them those questions. I don't know. I won't be watching all. Like, I get home around six. I won't be watching until probably 8 o'clock. I got stuff I got to do. But I will be curious, and if D.C. holds true to form, about 15 seconds before President Trump makes his announcement, that's when the word will actually leak out about who the announcement is going to be.
Right.
And so as the president is opening his mouth, that's when all of the tweets will come out. Like, right. cause that's just how it works. So yes. we'll see. Just by the way. Watch for the freak out. That's my other word of note.
Yeah.
yeah, I know they're freaking out now.
You're right. It's going to go crazy. Absolutely.
Yeah. Especially if it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who it is.
Oh, no.
It really doesn't.
No.
It could be, Kurt Schlichter.
If it's not Merrick Garland, it's a freak out coming, whoever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually wonder if there'll actually be protests outside of the Supreme Court tonight.
Oh, there will be. Oh, you absolutely. You count on that. And you know they all have crews that are standing by 100%. Absolutely.
And then everybody will go and they'll get tapas after they finish protesting. Because, there's some great tapas places open late on Capitol Hill. Some fantastic diners. All right. When we come back after a quick timeout, we were there. We were right outside of the Supreme Court this weekend for the March for Our Rights on Capitol Hill. Beautiful location. Had the Capitol on one side of the Supreme Court building on the other. And we will talk with the organizer of the D.C. March for Our Rights, Morgan Sachs. I had the opportunity to chat with Morgan before the rally took place on Saturday, but we'll share that interview with you right after a quick break. So stick around. There's much more Cam and Company on the way.
Let me ask you a simple question. Do you believe you have a right to defend yourself and your family with a firearm in your own home? 4 Supreme Court justices say you do, but 4 say you don't. Because the deciding vote announced he's retiring. And your most fundamental right to self-defense could be extinguished. This is our opportunity to protect the one freedom that guarantees all the others. The freedom that makes America different from every other country on earth. The Second Amendment is at stake. America is at stake. We are the last place on earth that still believes in the fundamental God-given right of self-defense. And we don't care if we're the last ones in the arena. We will never, ever stop fighting for this freedom. We're the National Rifle Association of America, and we're freedom's safest place.
It's as patriotic as it gets. A gathering in the heartland of folks from all 50 states. Welders, salesmen, farmers, accountants, soldiers, first responders. Here, we're all the same. Here, we are all race fans. We are proud of our country, proud of our military, proud of our drivers. We proudly stand for our national anthem. And we have a great reverence for names like Yarborough, Earnhardt, Waltrip, and Gordon. Yes, there are other NASCAR races, but this one is special. 500 temper flaring, finger waving, ego busting 15 second laps. And deep into the warm August night, hardly a seat in the last great Coliseum will be used. You see, this isn't just a race. This is America's night race.
Citizenry makes for a stronger country, a stronger society, a safer society.
And we prepare for so much that leads up to pulling the trigger. Are you prepared to deal with what happens after?
It's as complete a package as we could possibly have put together. We want to give someone the tools so that they can make good decisions in a very stressful, probably the most stressful situation that they'll ever encounter.
Having the NRA actually put together standardized concealed carry training and putting the resources behind it, says quite a bit.
Everybody involved has that real world experience, has the education, has the understanding.
You know that this training is safe and it will work.
From the tactical, we're ready up.
Hello?
It's far easier than anyone understands for an innocent person to be convicted of a crime.
We live in a litigious society. You need an attorney that understands what you've gone through, that understands the legal parameters of this situation, and is going to be able to not just adequately defend your rights, but to defend your rights from the tyranny of restrictions that prevent you from being able to defend yourself. Protect yourself. Get Carry Guard.
Call 911, wait for the law enforcement to show up, and then call the emergency hotline on the back of their NRA Carry Guard membership card that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year to all NRA Carry Guard members.
When we're talking about something like the NRA, we're talking about the largest civil rights organization in the country.
There is no other entity that has the expertise, the resources, the connections, the philosophy, and the infrastructure.
There is no other organization in the United States of America that can do what NRA has done with Carry Guard. There is no organization that gives you that gold standard protection and assurance.
If I find myself in a position where I had to use my gun to defend my life, I can tell you right now, I'm going to be glad that I had the Carry Guard.
Welcome back to Cam and Company here on NRA TV. Cam Edwards, your host. And yes, this past weekend, I did something I don't really normally do. I actually went into Washington, D.C. itself. I don't have my D.C. concealed carry license. I don't like D.C. traffic. I try to stay away as much as possible. But you know what? When the March for Our Rights was taking place, that was worth actually going. And I'm glad that I went. I'm glad I was there. Got to meet a lot of great Second Amendment advocates. Cameron Gray was there on a beautiful Saturday afternoon. I found a place to park that was like four blocks away. Only got turned around twice, Cameron, trying to find my car afterwards. So that was good. Didn't really have any issues leaving. It was a fantastic trip into D.C. It was everything I could possibly ask for. Got to hang out with gun owners. Didn't have to deal with D.C. traffic, and it was beautiful weather. What more could you ask for? And before I had an opportunity to speak at the March for Our Rights, I did have the opportunity to speak with Morgan Sachs, who's the organizer for the D.C. March for Our Rights. Take a look and a listen. Well, we're here at the D.C. March for Our Rights, talking with Morgan Sachs, the D.C. Head of the organization. Morgan, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm excellent. So tell me how this all got started. I mean, how do you go from, you know, we should do something in support of the Second Amendment to actually having a rally and a march right here on the steps of the Capitol?
Well, it got started about a few months ago when March for Our Lives was taking place. A few high school students came to us and said they felt their voices weren't being heard because they were obviously pro-Second Amendment, and that wasn't the narrative that the media was going with, and it wasn't the narrative that their schools were going with or their communities, and they felt really silenced. So they wanted their own march, their own way to express the way they felt. So that's why we're here out today.
Now, obviously, you all have not gotten the major media support that the anti-gun gun control activists have gotten. You haven't gotten a lot of the free press, the wall-to-wall coverage. What is it? What have some of the challenges been in trying to organize this and put it together?
Mostly with getting permits. The D.C. Capitol Police haven't been the most helpful. A lot of it has been, you know, we don't obviously have the same kind of donations that March for Our Lives do. As you can tell, we don't have the greatest stage. We don't have 500,000 people. We have a great number of supporters. We're just doing our best. We're doing our hardest, and that's all we can really do.
And this is sort of this is the ground floor for y'all, right? I mean, you want to build from here.
Exactly. Hopefully we'll be out here next year and the year after that and the year after that.
So how did you get involved in the Second Amendment? Why is the Second Amendment important to you?
Well, for me personally, my father is law enforcement. My grandfather is law enforcement. I grew up with guns. I shot my first shotgun at 10 years old. So I'm familiar with Second Amendment and guns. And I was actually born just outside of Parkland, Florida. My cousins went to Stoneman Douglas High School. They were actually attended March for Our Lives. So that was interesting. But for me personally, I met with some of the students from Stoneman Douglas, and they weren't for gun control, and they felt their voices weren't being heard, and they felt even afraid to speak up in school, in their classrooms. Their teachers were just not treating them right, the same way they would treat students who were left-leaning. And it was a real shame, because 17 of their students had just passed away, and now they felt like their voices weren't even being heard, just because they disagree with students like David Hogg. And it's just a real disappointment to me in my community.
There's a lot of peer pressure to support gun control. And if you don't, there is that attitude. I've talked with several high school students who have said, you know, whether it's my peers or whether it's teachers, they just can't. They can't quite understand why it is that you wouldn't be on board with banning guns, why you wouldn't be on board with raising the age to 21 to purchase a firearm. What do you say to people who would ask you, you know, Morgan, these are just common sense regulations that we're calling for, like getting rid of these battlefield weapons of war. Why aren't you in support of that?
Well, for me personally, I'm 22 years old. I just left South Florida, where I just graduated college. And the reason why I oppose the age restriction that they just did is because, as a young woman, that's my safety. It's a necessity to have a gun, I feel, because a lot of young women, especially college women, sexual assault, sexual violence is incredibly prevalent. I'm actually going to be talking about that in my speech. 43,300 times in the past year, that's how many women have used a gun to defend themselves. And that's what the media will not report. And I'll be reading that up in my speech today. But it's a shame because no one talks about that. They don't realize it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, we do a segment on Cam and Company every day where we do armed citizen stories. Mm-hmm. And maybe like one out of every 50 will get picked up by the national media, right? Yeah. The rest of the time, it's just sort of largely ignored. And there is this conscious bias now. I think the media has become more activist. They really believe that if we pass these gun control laws that all of a sudden violent crime will drop. I don't think many of them understand that violent crime is about half what it was 20 years ago. You know, we've had the expansion of right to carry. We have over 400 million privately owned firearms in this country, and violent crime has been dropping. It hasn't been climbing.
Yeah, you're entirely right. And you never hear that. The media loves to report this pro-gun control narrative, and they love to pretend that high school students and college students are all for gun control, but it's just not the case. There are students like myself, high school students, and the state NFA students, which you really don't hear from because there's not a David Hogg, there's not Emma Gonzalez coming from there.
That's right. And so that gets largely forgotten, right?
Exactly.
And the media portrays this as the youth speaking with one voice, and you're here to give some other voices a chance. Well, Morgan, listen, I appreciate you spending some time talking with us before the event, and the best of luck this afternoon.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here.
You bet. Morgan Sachs with March for Our Rights here on NRA TV. All right. We are about 10 minutes away from the end of the program, about a little more than 4 hours away from the announcement by President Donald Trump. Who will replace Anthony Kennedy on the U.S. Supreme Court? Meanwhile, Vox is out with a Voxplainer today. There's nothing in the Constitution mandating that the Supreme Court have 9 members. And a simple act of Congress could increase that number to 15, even more. Yeah. Do you know that, Cameron? You're just a simple act of Congress. Who's in charge of Congress at the moment, Cameron? I'm curious.
I'll Google it, but I think it's the Republicans.
I think you're right. Mm. Yeah. So, there is that saying in boxing about telegraphing your punches, right? I read that headline and I think, well, maybe it's time for the doctrine of preemptive packing. If we're now hearing that packing the court is not a bad thing, all it takes is a simple act of Congress. Well, one would assume that the next time Democrats are in charge, then maybe they'd want to expand that court. Got 9 justices right now. Let's say when Democrats take control of Congress, maybe they win back the White House. Let's say it's a 6-3 majority on the court. Those in the mold of Antonin Scalia. So they could just, nominate 7 Democrats, right? We'll just expand the court from 9 to 16. And all of them will be Democrats. And we'll just do it all at one time. Yeah, that'd be fantastic. So why not have the doctrine of preemptive packing? And here's why. Because the American people would look at whoever did that as certainly violating the norms. And I know, again, that folks on the left would say, well, yeah, but, Garland never got a vote. That violated norms. So why can't we pack the court? Hey, you want to make the mistake? Go ahead and make the mistake. You know, one could argue that it did not cost Franklin Roosevelt re-election when he had his court packing scheme. After all, he did get re-elected, right? But it did certainly get in the way of his policies. And the reason why, you know, we don't learn this history in high school. They don't teach about the court packing that FDR had floated out. But FDR was upset because a lot of FDR's programs, like the NRA, the Blue Eagle NRA, the National Recovery Administration, was told businesses set price controls for businesses. And you'd only charge so much. And you had to have that sign showing that you had that big Blue Eagle. And you were only supposed to shop at those stores and do business with those folks who had that big Blue Eagle proudly displayed. Supreme Court, throughout the National Recovery Administration, throughout a lot of the New Deal programs that Roosevelt had established, Roosevelt was a little peeved by that and thought, well, I'll just pack the court. If I can't get my way, if the court's going to block me, I'll just pack the court full of people who won't block me. And it did not go well. There was virtually no support not the support that Roosevelt would have needed to get that through a simple act of Congress. The public was not pleased or interested in that idea. It was widely seen as one of Roosevelt's biggest mistakes. And now you've got Vox touting the idea. Everything old is new again, I guess, but I don't think that would end well. If that's what they're going to run on, I guess between now and November, packing the court, erasing the borders, banning the guns, shouting at people you disagree with while they eat dinner. What else am I forgetting, Karen? Oh, and then all the free stuff.
Well, I don't know if you saw this tweet today by Frank Luntz. I'll retweet it at KM & Company. It says June 2015 versus July 2018, and it's screenshots of Vox's Ezra Klein. In June 2015, Ezra Klein said, "Why the Supreme Court saved Obamacare," in one perfect sentence. And then July 18th, Ezra Klein says, "The Supreme Court has always been undemocratic. What it's becoming is something more dangerous, anti-democratic." He is fun. Yeah.
Look, you know, and again, what's changed? Well, I mean, for Ezra Klein, Gorsuch, right? That's what's changed. It's not Merrick Garland. It's not the this is a court that's now, you know, more likely to issue opinions that Ezra Klein disagrees with. So now it's anti-democratic. And the thing is, look, you don't have to be the most partisan right winger to look at that headline and say, okay, whatever, Ezra. Right? I mean, that's the thing. You don't. You just have to be. All you have to have is some common sense. To look at that headline and say, okay, so depending on who's in office, that makes the court a wonderful thing or an anti-democratic institution, an anti-democracy institution based on who's in the White House. The sad thing is that, again, there are lots of folks who take Vox seriously and who take Ezra Klein seriously, who present this as if it is this, you know, sort of intellectual analysis as opposed to rah-rah rooting for their team. And that's all it is, just rooting for their team. When they don't have the ball and they're playing defense, then the court is anti-democracy. And there's a fascist in charge of the White House. And dissent is the highest form of patriotism. When they're in charge, dissent is not the highest form of patriotism. When they're in charge, dissent is treason. When they're in charge, the Supreme Court is not anti-democratic. When they're in charge, the Supreme Court is simply doing the will of the people when they get the decisions that they want. Right? And you know, wouldn't you have more respect for Ezra Klein and the folks at Vox, if they just came out and admitted it? If they just said, yeah, you know what? You're right. It's partisan tribalism. We're not immune to it, too. We're just as guilty of it as everybody else. I would at least respect their honesty. But again, it's that that false claim of the moral high ground of we're just unbiased observers of the political scene, Cameron. That's all we are. We're not taking sides. We don't have our thumb on the scale here. We're just observers of the human condition.
It's sad to watch, and when you explain it like that, it makes it even sadder. It really is, because I'm with you. I really like people you can have honest debates with. Intellectual honesty on both sides is, I think, is paramount to any real discussion or any reform for sure. But when you have stuff like this, that it, and you're right, people on that side should call this out too. And people on our side should call out when we pull the same crap. This does nothing to advance anything, a narrative, a story, a policy, nothing. It's scorekeeping, but in a very weird way. It's like negative scorekeeping. There's nothing positive about it.
No, there's not. But, you know, I'll give you one more example of this because I was reminded of this as you were talking about it. Brian Stelter of CNN over the weekend, I saw some tweet where he was going off on some guest on the Jesse Waters show. And the guest had said something outrageous. I don't even know what it was. And Jesse Waters had said something that Brian Stelter felt was not much of an admonishment. And so the tweet was something like, God, it was just, can you believe this? I never. I mean, if he clutched my pearls a little tighter. And it was pointed out from a lot of folks that, you know, look, your network had people on calling Dana Loesch a terrorist, saying that Dana Loesch had the blood of children on her hands. Nobody said anything at CNN, right? And, you know, look, Brian Stelter is the media analyst for CNN. He knows as well as anybody else that our modern media is awash in clickbait content, right? Our modern media produces clickbait like Willy Wonka made chocolate. And he knows it. But, again, he's going to clutch those pearls a little tighter because he's just as much a part of the problem as the folks that he's railing against. All right, that music means we've got to scoot. Be sure to tune in tomorrow. We will have full coverage of President Trump's Supreme Court announcement. Thank you so much for being part of this edition of Cam and Company. Enjoy the rest of SCOTUSmas.